Stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Chair, I have some accounts payable. I move that we approve the accounts payable at a recycle date 11/18 through 11/22. It'll be the regular checks of $1,370,728.30. Noting the county manager or the county manager, assistant county manager, has reviewed and approved such.
Second.
Items of note.
So this is actually reviewed by the county manager, so I apologize. I'm reading his notes, but
good luck with that.
Exactly. That's the apology ahead of time. So a number of items of note. Payment to Tuck Communication Services Incorporated of $5,281 from IT, replacement phones for the Mitel system. I believe 12 of those were replaced. Colorado Kenworth Incorporated, $279,742. Heavy equipment pool expenditure for 2020 Kenworth T800 plow truck with blade. CML Security LLC, $20,361.02 of the building and plant pool for video camera replacements at the Adult Detention Center. Duckles Construction Incorporated, $59,327.98 from Road and Bridge Infrastructure Budget Pool. Green Truss Bridge, believe this is a progress payment on that project. So there's, I believe, we paid a little over $1 million, $1,045,629 approximately. So we've got about $128,007.97 left on that project budget. So we're nearly done payments for Green Trust. There was a distribution of last quarter funding for dedicated mill levies and for the budget for the district attorney. Luan and Associates, a payment of $117,798 from the IT pool for EXA grid backup storage system with 5-year support and maintenance agreement. Municipal Emergency Services Incorporated, a payment of $8,370 from the YVRA budget for emergency bunker gear. Kind of sounds a little scary.
As long as you never have to use it.
Exactly. North Route Fire Protection District, there are two payments, one of $1,502. This is from the wildfire budget for the Mill Creek 2 fire from August 21st, 2019.
How much was that?
$1,502. And then a second payment to North Route Fire Protection District of $953 for the Indian Run fire from August 2019. Payments of Oak Creek Fire Protection District of $3,900.91. Wildfire budget payment for Indian Run fire. And this is for time spent the August 2019, the 19th through the 21st. The payment to Precision Excavating Incorporated of $213,212.67. Road and Bridge Infrastructure Budget for Roper Bridge, West Fork, Elk River, includes retained earnings. Payment to City of Steamboat Springs, $230,129.90 for the building and plant pool for the CLEF September payment. West Route Fire Protection District, payment of $14,821.81 from the wildfire budget. This is for Indian Run Fire. Appears that was from August 17 to August 29, 2019 activity. West Route Fire Protection District, payment of $7,536.25. Wildfire budget for Mill Creek 2 fire. This is August 19 to 23, 2019. Payment to Calcon Constructors Incorporated, $37,754 from the building and plant budget for hardscape at the Sheriff Adult Detention Center.
Hardscape?
That's what it says.
Hardscape project. We were paying them separately for the concrete work where we were replacing bad sections of concrete in the parking lot. Okay.
Sounds like hardscape to me.
So. Yeah.
And it was separate from the CLEF budget.
Yeah, I think so. And then the final payment is payment of note is ABS Aviation Consultancy Incorporated, $18,500 for YVRA for market rent analysis.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Madam Chair, I would move that we approve consent agenda items A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and H.
We have a couple resolutions. Yeah, go ahead.
H is actually a resolution that I believe is different than what the agenda says. The date is December 10th, and Anthony Valentine's Day and Colorado Gives Day are interchanged. We mean the same thing.
You're talking about an I.
What was that?
On I?
No, we...
On H. Okay.
Okay,
we
hold
took
on.
Off the what?
Let me find some... let me get you some resolution numbers.
So how do you... So, yeah, we have a... We took off the one for public health because we wanted to do it with public health.
Sorry, what are you... okay, so Tim just said A through I. Are we pulling some...
No, I said A through H.
Oh, A through H. There's no I.
Yeah, there was no okay. I.
Okay, so how many of these are resolutions? G, okay. F appears to be a resolution. G is a resolution, correct?
Yep.
Any other ones?
F, G, and H.
F, G, and H. All right, so item F will be resolution 62. I apologize. Don't double them up. Which is the vacation of County Road 15.
50.
50, sorry. Thank you. God. It's like there's a holiday this week or something.
There might be.
Item G, which is approving West Route Library Board members. Will be resolution 2019-63. And then item H, which, as noted by Deanna, is a resolution designating which date, December 10th, 2019, as Yampa Valley Gives Day. That will be resolution number 2019-64.
So you didn't get a second, so I'll second that motion. Yep.
All right. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
So I assume you have the vacation or one of them, huh?
Okay, let me...
2 weeks. I had on my calendar 4:30 at the board. 4:30 at the board. Yesterday.
Oh.
And we saw you in the hallway,
well,
and then I didn't know.
Apparently it got changed to 3, and it's like, oh, gosh. I guess I'll go home.
Well, thanks for coming by at 4:30.
Well, I just think it's kind of the timing is really good, and, you know, a lot of this stuff, I'm speaking, obviously, to the master plan and the steering committee and the project and all those things, so that's why I'm here. I wanted to share, I think, some feelings that, in general, Planning Commission would share. I mean, it's just not Troy, I don't think, even though we haven't had a conflap, but I think I can share kind of the thoughts. And I know I don't have a lot of time, but the when I read this latest...
I mean, you have 10 minutes, Troy, so, yeah, I think
which
that's...
Which for me is probably...
You don't know if these other folks here are for public comment.
I don't think they are.
Okay.
I mean, we can, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just, I'd like to maybe hit a couple of bullets that share with you. The latest timeline that I saw in this thing now takes us out till August
2021.
You know, I vocalized at the last steering committee meeting that I really don't think that's what it's going to take and require. And I would like to preface, too, that any of my comments, I don't want to want you to feel that I'm in any way trying to stifle public, you know, input and comments, because I think that's why we're all here, is to, you know, is to reflect our public. But I actually ran into Diane Mintbush on the sidewalk the other day. Pollyanna, is that what you call her?
Sometimes.
Anyway,
she would appreciate that.
You know,
she
was laughing.
She would acknowledge that.
But, you know, there's other components of this about that just seems to keep going on and on and on. Specifically towards outreach. And, you know, I feel fairly strongly that Planning Commission, the board, I mean, we should put sunsets on these outreach efforts. And so whether that is stakeholders or public or, you know, I envision meetings at the library or, you know, down at Yampa.
Up in Yampa.
Up, thank you. I know you interrupt. But you're right. You know, or anywhere. I look forward to those kinds of outreaches and bringing it all back. But I think we have to limit and cut that off at some point. My timeline would be second quarter of 2020. And then in the summertime, you know, we take it all, collate it, analyze it, sift through it, and create a draft document. I'm really struggling with how we can spend $200,000 on this. I would rather see the board apply for like $50,000 from DOLA. So then you'd have we'd have $100,000 to spend on this effort. Knowing that the board is willing though to spend $100,000, you could hold that $50,000 back. So we have $100,000, $50,000 from the county, $50,000 from DOLA, and $50,000 that is kind of the slush fund if needed. But to go out and I just don't picture it. I don't visualize how we're going to spend that kind of money in this effort. So, comment for what it's worth. So I think those are really the points that struck me the most. Is this thing just dragging out? It's gotten, I think, much, much, much bigger than was ever initially envisioned. And I don't mind the stakeholders and the public and all of the groups. I mean, there was a suggestion in here, or I heard somewhere, maybe it was Chad, that, you know, we were going to meet with HOAs. I don't think, first of all, I think there's dozens and dozens of those. And at some point, I believe that we need to get the message out, be it social media, the pilot, and those type of recognized sources that people look at. But then we advertise our meetings, we advertise our outreach, we get there, but then at some point too, even though the consultant says we go to where they are, I appreciate that, but they got to come to us too. You know, and if they feel that strongly about the master plan or an issue or the way we utilize the master plan, I would hope then that through the marketing and the advertising and the putting out what we're doing, that they would have enough interest to send an email, to come in, to attend a meeting, or you know, do the public comments at the board or public comments at Planning Commission. So if they feel that strongly, obviously you'd like to hear from them. But I just feel it's kind of grown a life of its own. And I think part of my goal today would be to say, you know, let's rein it in a little bit here and move this thing ahead. You know, I feel that this survey should have a sunset on it that's out there now. We've got 275 responses, I think. Love to get more, but that thing sunsets. And then we can take that information, steering committee, chew it up, staff, spit it out. If you've got to go back for another survey, let's do it. But then that thing sunsets. And I think staff right now should be setting up these meetings. I think we should be reserving the grant. We should be reserving the library. We should go to Hayden Gym or whatever it is, the fairgrounds, and get these things set up. So we can start getting some feedback to know then where we're going to go.
Thanks for those comments, Troy. I think some of what you just said was reflected in what we talked about with Chad yesterday, which is really needing to take that public input, which right now is kind of one item in that document, and phase it, which I think reflects what you're talking about. You know, determine what the exact purpose is and a more specific timeline around meetings, around the survey, around focus groups, around feedback on the drafts of the document, rather than it being just kind of one long item.
What is a focus group?
That's a good question.
We discussed that yesterday.
Sorry, I missed. I apologize.
No, you're okay.
Tim's
not trying to be sassy really, about
no,
that.
No, I'm not.
I know.
It was a question for us as well.
I think the idea is focused around a specific topic. So if we're going to talk about wildlife or we're going to talk about recreation, that there would be a group of people, that there would be some outreach specific to a topic that would be a focus group. Chad, is that reflective of what? Yeah. Okay. Chad gave me a thumbs up. So.
Yes. So the second point, you know, back to your $200,000 and whatever, you know, we're going to have that discussion this afternoon. I'm not comfortable with that $200,000 and the blanket. Oh, well, it's because we made the magic number because it needed to be a 50% match of whatever the maximum would be. But yet we haven't decided how much was going to be allocated for outreach, how much was going to be allocated for the consultant and the rest. So that's all going to be discussed yet this afternoon when we talk about the grant. And we still have some time to, I don't know, I'm with you. I think this thing's morphed way out of proportion. I appreciate having public comment and outreach. You know, we are, you know, and it's been a long time since we have done this. But anyhow, we need to, I think we need to do it right, but that doesn't mean that we did it right by spending $200,000 on it, spending roughly a year and a half, 2 years on it. So that doesn't make it right either. So I think we need to figure out how. And again, so, you know, it's, as you well know, the master plan is Planning Commission's document, so I hope you guys do what you need to do. We're doing the budget allocation and trying to create a framework for that. It's going to come back to you guys, and so you guys need to, you know, have some input on that as we move forward as well. So I think it's going to be a joint project, and we can figure out how. In my fear, and even through the survey, I don't think we still have allocated in the survey the things that we, Rouse County government, has control of. We still haven't identified land use versus all of the rest of the thing in the whole world of Rouse County, period. And then we, and there's a lot of things out there that are low, we're just trying to get a grasp on. And so
I would just add to what you said, Doug, about, I mean, beyond just allocating the funds, I think that this board also has some obligation around the public outreach component. You know, I think our citizens expect us to be engaged
and to assist you guys in getting that feedback and providing funding for that through the budget process.
And I think supporting those efforts as well. I mean, I think the public-facing part of that is, you know, we have a sense of our obligation to do that. And so you made the statement that the consultant believes we should go to where they are. I mean, I really believe we need to go to where people are, too. I don't necessarily think we are going to plan to meet with every single one of those stakeholder groups that was in that appendix. But I do think some outreach efforts, in addition to our own meetings where we ask people to come to us, I think both of those have to happen, or we're only going to get the same people that we always get.
I mean, I know that we agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, Planning Commission, I know, I'm not sure how many, of course, when we set up our dates and timelines and all that, can attend personally, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, I have different obligations, but, you know, I, for one, we intend to be at as many of those meetings as I can make.
Absolutely.
Because I do think being there in person is a lot different than getting a report from the chat or, you know, from anybody that was there. I want to hear it. And I want to emphasize that none of my comments, I hope you take, as being trying to stifle public input.
No, definitely.
That's not my point. It's simply that we're dragging this out. It's gotten too dang big. And we need steering committee or collectively, the board and planning commission, you know, focus thing. And I asked Christy to put on our website the link to the existing master plan. So in education and in knowing what it is we're talking about, they can click that, and right there is the existing master plan. So they can see what we've been working with. And then hopefully if that generates questions, we can respond to that. But I think that's kind of a document that this started with. And right now, there's not a lot of reference to the existing master plan in here. We're updating the master plan. Here's the reasons why. It's old. Okay, fine. We need a new date. But what is it? I mean, I read some of those survey things, and the responses we're getting are like, climate change. Well, I appreciate the input, but then tell me what the county can do. What would you, as a citizen that signed that email, what is it that you'd like to see the county do? You can't just tell me climate change and then expect me to understand what it is you want.
In fact, our master plan right now totally supports the concept of averting climate change by concentrating the transportation mode mm-hmm. into the, you know, and concentrating development into the cities. So, yeah.
So, I just have one comment. Two. Number one, thanks for sharing your concerns with us. And I understand the concern around the dollars. I mean, it's a big number, but it's given me pause for thought. But as far as the timeline is concerned, I guess I would be more concerned if we rushed into this process and didn't get the product that we needed, and anybody felt like that they didn't have an opportunity to weigh in. So I'm less concerned about the length of this project than, say, the cost. But I hear what you're saying.
Well, I hear your point too, Tim. I think this thing there's a risk of getting stale and losing focus too. So, I mean, we need to discuss it and say,
I think we would agree that we don't want to drag it out, but we also need to give it the time that it deserves to do a good job. And I think the balance between those two things is really important. And we talked about that at the steering committee, that we want to make sure that this isn't just dragging on without some momentum and some energy behind it.
And my last comment is, I spent 12 years on school board being advised that during public comment we should never respond to anybody in public comment. It's different here at the commissioner's table.
Well, it depends.
Yes.
I'll tell you when you're not allowed to respond. Okay. Depends who comes in. Thank you for your time, Troy. And thank you for your work on this. We really appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving. Come on up. You can, I mean, it's up to Carrie if you can join us, Sean.
Chicken.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
Good.
I woke up this morning and I didn't feel so great, and I was like, I better not have norovirus.
Yeah.
My wife came back from Junction yesterday afternoon, you know, and so she's just feeling like hell, and I just stay the hell, go to bed.
So well, I saw that West Graham School District also closed,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
Oh, my gosh, that's so bad. And then I drop my kid off at daycare every day, and I'm like, don't touch anything.
You know, when there's this sickness going on, there's this hyper thing in your brain that, oh, you know,
yeah, and then you pay attention.
So you're just feeling, oh, yeah, my throat hurts, or my stomach aches. You just want to be sick. It's like,
no. So we're meeting as the Board of Health. Great. And our first item for consideration is the immunization subcontract with Northwest Colorado Health. So I know this has been a long process trying to finalize this. So do you want to tell us a little bit about just kind of where we are?
Sure. And,
yeah.
Sure. So the CDPHE immunizations contract was signed between the county and CDPHE already, but this subcontract has gone back and forth, I think, three or four times. With different amendments. I guess my concern that I wanted to bring forward is just in Moffitt County, we have had some difficulty getting the documentation that's needed for auditing purposes on this particular contract. And so Northwest Colorado Health has not yet submitted any documentation and won't until this is signed. And I just would like to alert you that there may be documentation issues with compliance for CDPHE with what is being submitted.
So do they provide their documentation when we pay them? I mean, when I do things and when Tim needs to do things, you're providing your documentation to get paid.
Right.
So
it's the
or not, just
in case.
It's just the quality of the documentation.
Uh-huh.
So we've had some issues with timesheets and supporting documentation for where people were working, which county they were working. I mean, there's just been an array of different issues. So I guess my question is, if we sign this subcontract today, well, Sean and I have talked about holding payment until the documentation received is substantive enough that we feel like the payment can be released. Should that be the plan moving forward through the end of June?
Which the payment being released, what does that mean?
We don't pay them anything until they give us the appropriate documentation.
Yeah.
But we pay them one lump sum, or we pay them as
it's quarterly. The payment that we receive is quarterly, and
but we've already gone through two quarters, correct?
Yes,
because this is a July, mm-hmm. So they have not received any payment.
They received the first one.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they
just
also
have the second payment in.
You mean they've received payment for the third quarter?
Yes.
Well, they received payment for services, you know, from insurance or whatever other mechanism as well. So they're not getting paid. It's not getting necessarily the pass-through from us, from the state. So.
For this specific.
Well, I think that if there's documentation that we believe needs to be submitted to the state, and they shouldn't be paid until they provide that to us. I mean,
question, too, we can also approve and authorize the chair signature and then defer management of the contract back to you,
okay,
that's managing,
right,
the contract, and that, wouldn't you think?
I would think so.
I mean,
but I mean,
terms of the contract.
Sure.
If you believe that's what needs to be done, then I think you should do that, mm-hmm, in my opinion.
We have a risk if we don't submit to the state,
right,
as expected.
That they won't reimburse,
yeah,
us.
Exactly.
Right?
They won't,
right,
pay us. Or,
yeah.
Right, or ask
audited
for the money back in the rears, right, is another concern.
Yeah.
So
I have a couple of real straightforward questions. Looking at the background information,
mm-hmm,
it says this contract's through June of 2019.
Oh, it should be June 2020.
2020.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
I can double check what it says in here.
And then on our agenda communication form, the recommended action refers to the public health improvement plan.
That's the next thing we're going to do.
So
you got to scroll up to the one above that. Oh, no, that's the same one.
Yeah, so.
It's just incorrect.
Incorrect.
This is not related to the public health.
All we're talking about
plan.
In this particular action item
is
the subcontract with Northwest Colorado Health for immunizations.
For right now. Yes.
For right now.
For right now, yes.
Okay.
We had a lot of things on the
so
agenda.
This recommended action says public health improvement plan. So I think that was just a mistake.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's all right. Tim's just checking.
So wait a second. That's not what Dan just said, though.
Well,
that is
all
the next item.
It's
not. It's a separate item.
Immunization plan is probably in relationship to the public improvement.
We're going to have a separate action item because we are hiring North. We're not even hiring Northwest Colorado Health.
No.
To do our public health improvement plan.
No, that's Northwest Colorado Health Partnership.
Okay.
All we're considering right now is a subcontract to Northwest Colorado Health for immunizations.
Correct.
Through June of 2020,
and with the intent of sending an RFP, out as soon as that's prepared. I don't know what that season is of when that happens, but
whenever you would like it to be.
Okay. Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's a 60-day process, so back that out.
At least 60 days prior to when you want the contract to start.
It'll be beginning of second.
No later than March.
Okay, so that's what I'd like to do is send an RFP out at that 60 days, at least 60 days on this, and then hold payment until we get the proper documentation. It does say completing all work by June 30th of 2020. I don't see the attorney's stamp on this, but I know they've been involved. Mm-hmm. So we usually want their stamp on the contract. So
okay.
You can do that after because I know that they've been involved and that they've approved this. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen it more times than he would care to.
Yeah, I've heard him talking about it.
Yeah.
And then I just had a question. I know one of the questions around this has been deliverables, and I still didn't really understand what the deliverables from Northwest Colorado Health are. Mm-hmm. You know, because obviously they provide immunizations in the community, right. They provide clinics. So what is it exactly that we are paying them $30,000 to do in addition to what they would already be doing?
So I don't know if you have the statement of work.
Well, I have this.
Yep.
Okay.
So essentially they're a VFC and 317 provider. So they provide the services for the uninsured and underinsured.
What's a 317 provider? It's a federal number and a federal program?
It's children who are underinsured and adults who are underinsured.
So VFC is vaccines for children.
Vaccines for children and then also underinsured adults. And so they are currently Northwest Colorado Health is our provider. And there's a series of, they're supposed to be doing, using evidence-based strategies in order to show that they're making a difference with the immunizations in the contract. They're supposed to be coordinating with the schools to get the immunizations rates from the schools and trending that, data collection, submitting quarterly reports. There's specific things that they need to be doing in compliance with this. One of the concerns that I did have, which I shared with Dan, is that they sent the quarterly report to me, and I asked for additional detail and additional backup information, and then they sent it anyway without making any kind of modification. So it's an issue. It's probably the bigger issue. So
really a lot of the things are documentation related more than just the actual administration of the vaccines, which they would probably be doing otherwise.
How do we know that the administration of the vaccines happened?
They're administering vaccines over there. I mean, I have confidence that they're doing that on a daily basis. It's just
A report back and a feedback.
That's what we're running into issues with, or ran into issues with in Moffitt County is, well, which county is that for? Which particular vaccine is that for? When was it administered? How many people are getting that vaccine? You know, those types of details is where we ran into problem getting.
Because I think that's the part I've had a question about. Like, there are lots of people providing vaccines in our community.
Right.
So what is it that they're being paid for? And it sounds like it's some of those general population health kinds of things, which has to do with documentation of outcomes. And,
And then specifically to, like, with the hepatitis B outbreak, hepatitis A, they're supposed to be doing clinics. Response to communicable disease outbreaks is part of this contract, too, with the immunizations. And so that's a big piece that I need support with, is if we have those types of situations, they need to be accessible in order to deploy for those particular types of outbreaks. So, flu clinics.
Got it.
Yeah.
So really, the biggest thing is you need to be able to hold them accountable for providing documentation of these services.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't have any other questions.
So I guess we came to consensus then that we're going to be approving this and authorizing your signature and deferring the administration of the contract back to the department head. Is that correct?
I think so.
In agreement of that?
Yes.
And that we are going to back you up if you need to with full payment from
exactly
them because
so,
of documentation.
Performance of deliverables.
Well, there's certainly, I can't remember what section it was, but there's certainly good language in the contract about remedies for failure to perform. So
yeah.
I think contractually pretty strong standing to withhold payment if you don't get what you need.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve and authorize your signature on the immunization subcontract with Northwest Colorado Health regarding the immunization subcontract.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Do you need me to sign this one, too, or did we already sign this?
We already signed that.
Okay. State. So that's just an attachment.
Yep.
Okay, so you'll need to make sure the attorney's office puts their stamp on it.
Great.
And that they have a copy of it.
Great.
Thank you. All right, so the next item for consideration is the subcontract of the public health improvement planning to the health partnership.
Yes. So essentially, we received the $25,000 for planning and public health improvement planning. And the idea of this, which we had talked about at the Board of Health meeting before, was that we need to see some movement on the public health improvement plan and get it done. And so the health partnership happens to have a person who worked for CDPG previously as the CHAPS, Community Health Assessment Planning person, who is very familiar with all of that. And so this subcontract is for her to write the public health improvement plan with input from the Board of Health and from me and from community partners.
And this is obviously, I mean, based on what you've just said, I think a sole source is justified because of the expertise of the person involved.
Just so it's a consultation with the Board of Health.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'd like to be
right.
consulted, yeah, or at least asked, whatever.
And one thing that I would like to point out on this is the focus of the Public Health Improvement Plan, the wellness consortium that we're putting together to get all the medical providers together to try to steer the ship in the same direction. That's really where we want to go with the Public Health Improvement Plan, is using that group in order to make consolidated decisions in our county, using the expertise of Dr. Harrington, UC Health, the CEO, all of those people that are involved in the consortium.
When do we expect to see this new plan completed?
Haley would like to have a draft done by the end of December.
End of December?
End of this December. Yeah, I put some things in there that she's already put together on it.
So,
the end of this December.
I'm just a little bit confused. Didn't we just complete the last public health improvement?
No, that was 2012 through 2016. That was very old.
I thought that.
Community Health Assessment Plan, but that brings forth the issue. So there's the Hospital Transformation Project, there's the Community Health Assessment, there's 15 different projects.
But the Community Health Assessment Plan, isn't that designed to inform the Public Health Improvement Plan?
Correct, yeah.
So we did get that done.
That part, yes, okay. We have that part done,
thank you.
Yes.
There was one line in here that looked like it wasn't completed. So on this page in Exhibit A right here, do you see that it just says business days advanced written notice to the other party?
Yeah.
But there's nothing before that.
Right.
So that seems like an error.
Okay.
I
don't know. Eric did look this over.
Okay.
So I'm not sure exactly.
Okay. Well, somebody should fix that.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I don't have a problem with signing it, but I just wanted to point that out to you. And then you just mentioned someone's name, Haley, but this specifically talks about it's relying on the personal services and reputation of Stephanie Monahan. So, what's this deal? Under supervision?
Yep.
Haley, okay. Mm-hmm.
So Stephanie Monahan is the unit.
Right, she's the director.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But she's not the one doing the work.
No, Haley's doing the work. And Haley's the one that worked for
So how do we incorporate that back into the county's contract when she's not employed by us? Or doesn't have a contract with us? Definitely.
Well, that's the subcontract. That's what the contract is. It says it's reliant on the personal professional expertise, whatever.
With Stephanie Monahan's.
She's supervising
her role as
the person
director.
Doing it. Yeah.
Okay. Clear as mud.
The idea is to get it done and then to bring people together in order to actually move forward with it.
And so then this actually is a joint plan between us and Moffitt County, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And Moffitt County's contributing funding to this as well?
It's all state funding.
It's all state funding.
The good hands of all state.
Not quite.
I'm going to guess that these folks are already working on this and they plan on having a draft done by the end of December.
Yeah, well, what we wanted to do is with the consortium to have some of these conversation talking points anyway, and so it all kind of comes together.
Okay.
Yeah.
You ready for a motion?
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I would move to approve your signature on the subcontract to the Health Partnership for services in writing the Public Health Improvement Plan.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. So same thing, the thought should have the bank attorney's stamp on it, and they should have a copy.
Okay. I'll bring this to you later.
Thanks.
And I'm just, like comment, thanks, Carrie, for putting this all together.
Yeah, absolutely.
All of this work that's getting done kind of supports our decision to take these services over in-house. So
thank you.
I think it's good.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks, Sean. Yeah. Hi.
Hello. Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Pretty good.
All right, so we are just you're just requesting some direction on the Phippsburg Lagoon Liner Replacement Project.
Yes.
Correct? Okay.
Yes.
Well, tell us what's going on.
Okay. So I put in a pretty good description, I think, in the background information. And so rather than just reading that,
You don't need to read
I'll
that.
Ask if you guys have any questions about the history and how we got to where we are today. And I can give a synopsis. You know, basically, we pulled all this stuff together as far as grants and loans, and then went out for bid, and then we didn't get any bids, and then we went out for bid again, and we got a bid for $900,000, which was $600,000 more than we had budgeted. And so here we stand today trying to figure out what the heck to do. I have been in communication with CDPHE and enforcement, and I think that we're okay as long as we're proceeding with trying to figure out a way to get this taken care of. I've been involved with Mo and others with this hazard mitigation plan update and in a meeting with Tetra Tech. And
he's our contractor for the hazard mitigation plan.
Correct.
Right.
And asked if potentially a project like Phippsburg and possibly Milner in the future would fit under that FEMA funding. And they said yes, no hesitation. And
why?
So,
why does it fit?
Well,
do you know?
there's, I can't go, I don't have
it's
all the criteria on top of my head.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a wastewater treatment facility.
It's always good to plan for emergencies.
That's right.
Yeah. It's a wastewater treatment facility in a floodplain.
Okay. In short. Yeah.
And so funding source pays up to 75% of costs. And so it seemed logical to me that this is a better source of funding, 75% instead of 50%. We know that the cost is going to go up. I've been talking to Julie about this for a long time. I think that we're projecting that the real cost estimate is probably more in the neighborhood of $600,000. This $450,000 number for sludge removal that we got as a part of the cost estimate, I think, is way inflated. And it really depends on how you go through that process. Do you haul liquid and sludge directly to the landfill? That's going to be super expensive. Water's heavy. It's a lot of trips. Do you separate the solids from the liquids and then just haul the solids? Do you land farm in a nearby area? So there's a lot of different ways that you can do that. And I really think that our cost estimate from RG was very deficient in that area in estimating what that cost would be. But I think they were in the neighborhood as far as the actual liner replacement. So we're estimating the total cost should be in the neighborhood of $600,000. Of course, you know, we don't know what the bids are going to come in at. And then you've had a couple other people come in and express interest.
Yes. And so I went to the Northwest Colorado Contract Association lunch the other day, and I mentioned that we were actually the
There's
people.
A Northwest Colorado Contractors Association?
Mm-hmm. I just found out. So, and I actually had to present. So I looked down and I was on the agenda.
That was the same day, right?
So I brought, yes, okay. 5 minutes after I walked in. So I was saying that we were going to be going back out for bid for this project in 2020 and some of the other projects. And three contractors came over and they've been in contact with me. And I think that what we're really trying to think about is the best approach and having the sludge removal RFP go out and the liner replacement is looking like our best viable option.
Have two different contracts.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. And handle it two separate. And because there's people that just do the liners and just do the sludge, and we can take out the oversight. Obviously, we're still going to need some engineering done on this. And we're going to ask for a very detailed engineer's estimate going forward so that when we do get a bid like this, that we see where we're really off, mm-hmm. you know, so that hopefully we can get some kind of
So I want to back up. I was still not happy when they said that we were in non-compliance without any proof to be in non-compliant
right.
with the seepage and yeah. the rest, CDPHE. And, you know, and they basically have came in and said, well, clay liners are not acceptable anymore, raising the bar on the whole concept. And again, I'm still, without having proof, and then us not being able to prove that we're not in compliance because we don't have measurements in and measurements out or discharge measurements and the rest, I'm still struggling with, you know, and who's to say? And I mean, I'm not no scientist to the rest, but I do know what's right is right and what's wrong is wrong. And we're still having problems with the algae bloom in Stagecoach Reservoir. And I'd hate to think that, you know, we're contributing to that as well. But at the same point in time, I was totally opposed to this whole concept of us being out of compliance because now they raised a new rule and said that clay liners were no longer going to be acceptable. And I struggle really hard with that.
Yeah.
And whether that would be money well invested for us to analyze a little bit, of, you know, to figure out whether we're really in non-compliance.
So
answer that, please.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
so I agree.
You do.
I agree with you. I struggle with it also
I'm sure.
in this case. And I've seen it happen before at the mine where, you know, that selenium issue where, you know, they did a mine plan, mined and reclaimed, and then they had a new, you know, rule for selenium. So they've narrowed the goalposts with these seepage requirements. I kind of feel like the ship has sailed since
we've already acknowledged it
before I got here.
Yeah,
and any work at the state level to try to address what you're saying. I think that that's going to be at your level. You know, I don't know if there's anything that I can do about it right now.
So it's a political battle versus a science. I just wanted to take it back to a scientific level.
Yeah.
I mean, if we could prove how much water we are losing and whether it costs $20,000 to figure out, you know, exactly the engineering. And, you know, when we have Archie Associates, whatever, and when they come in and they're, you know, I'm sure they're a great firm. But they get hired to design the thing. They're not going to be advocating for us. And we never, ever fought this ruling of, you know, that we don't have seepage or the seepage is so de minimis that, you know, it's not an issue.
So isn't that irrelevant if the regulation says that clay liners are not allowed?
That's not what the regulations...
That's not the point.
The regulations...
And we're just buying time because Milner has the same thing.
So the regulations specify, the same liners. The regulations specify a certain rate of seepage. And what they're saying is that there's no way that a clay liner can meet that rate. And so that's what they said when Mike Zoff was here.
Right.
And they agreed with the engineer that it's essentially a waste of time to do a seepage study because we already know that clay liners don't meet that requirement. Now, we still did decide at some point to come in and do a seepage study. At that point, we found out that we had a broken pipe leading from the final pond to the building. And I don't know if that had anything to do with the determination on the compliance in the beginning.
Right.
Because we went through this transition. And so basically, our seepage study didn't make any sense because we had so much water loss from that pipe. So we could go in and do a seepage study.
But the assertion from CDPHE is that it's almost certainly going to come back with too much seepage because you have a clay liner.
That's correct.
Well, it will be sometime down the road.
And it only costs, you know, I think it cost about $2,000 to do the seepage study. And basically, they're measuring inputs, outputs, and then calculating evapotranspiration from transpiration. Anyway, transpiration from the surface of the ponds.
And again, I'm not getting down on you at all.
No, I know.
It just seems like a hell of a lot of money out there that we're spending on something we're curing a problem we don't even know we have.
It sounds like there's a couple things. One, that CDPHE doesn't believe that a clay liner can meet the requirements, so a seepage study may be a moot point. But I also heard you say that a seepage study would only cost a couple thousand dollars. And so, you know, you weigh that against the $600,000 cost of replacing it.
Yeah, but at some point in that not too far distant future, we're going to be replacing that liner.
But even then, though, is that the right way to do that? Are we going to replace it with a 20 mil, you know, fabric thing? Or could we still throw in some, something else on top of the clay?
On top of what we already have.
Yeah, on top of the clay liner ceiling, you know, so.
Well, I think that was the plan, is that you would empty the sludge and then you'd put the plastic HDPE liner over
on top of the clay.
Right. That was what our RFP came back with.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, what do you think, Scott? I mean,
what I thought, and it's just what I said in here, is first of all, you know, we have a $150,000 grant that Greg allowed us to extend to 2020.
Right.
And he also said that we could use that for sludge removal. And then we also have this loan. And so we have approximately $275,000 in money, but that's not enough to do what we need to do.
$100,000 project.
Right. We're paying
or even a $600,000.
We're paying $100 a month in interest on this loan. We've only paid 1 month of interest. But while it's been difficult for me, because of all we went through to get those, to let that go, I think the best thing to do is to pay back the loan. We haven't spent a dime on it. So we're not spending any money except for interest. And then I'm still struggling a little bit with the grant because maybe we can use that grant for sludge removal, right? If sludge removal costs $300,000, then we got 50% ready to go. But then we would need to get a loan for the remainder. Or do you just give back the whole thing and start all over and try to do it through this FEMA?
We can't use the DOLA grant as matching funds against the FEMA grant, can we?
I don't know.
It'd be worth it.
And I don't know if you can use...
I don't know if you can do it the other way around, if you could use the FEMA for matching against the DOLA. Yes.
And then there's also this rural development, which is, you know, I guess...
That would be a loan, right?
Or a grant. Grants or loans.
So I'm not ready to cave in the clay liner myself. I don't, you know... And again, if we cave in on that, we're caving in on Milner, too.
But on the other hand, I guess it would be a question that Scott might be able to answer. At some point in the future, we're going to have to do something.
Well,
even if the clay liner is currently working.
Well, I think what Scott wants...
That's the question.
I think, though, Scott today wants us to tell him whether or not we want him to pay back the loan and give back the grant. And then I think we should also, I mean, there's separate questions here, right? And it sounded like you were saying there's some political question here too, and maybe one of us needs to have a conversation with someone at CDPHE about whether we should go down that path.
Well, and I think we need to go down this and spend the $2,000. If you think we can get a seepage study done for $2,000-$3,000, I think we ought to do that. I think the citizens that are paying the bill up there on the enterprise fund would like us to get some insurance that it's really needed.
I mean, I guess for $2,000, I would agree with that. And I guess that question would be, do we hang on to the money that we currently have until we see the results of that study?
No, I'm kind of, and I think Beth's heading that way too. I think it's kind of like a water case. You're doing due diligence. You're just trying to make sure that they know we're trying to, you know. And again, we've been through the situation where you end up having, you know, a compliance fine. And you end up so, and yeah, they don't mind finding even local governments or, you know, people out there trying to make, you know, they'll find everybody and anybody, and then it just goes into the beer fund.
Well, so, one thing's for sure is that there's no point in any of us approaching CDPHE until we have the results of the CDPHE studies.
So I think so, yeah.
So here's the other thing to consider is that both facilities are almost 40 years old.
Yeah.
There's going to be other regulations along the same lines as what you're complaining
Absolutely,
about for ammonia and nutrients and, you know, who knows what else. And so we want to make sure that the money we're investing for updates to the facility, we're not going to have to go and make another investment in 10 years to meet new water quality requirements.
So what would be the best way to go about
Then you would be looking at maybe a whole new type of plant.
Yeah, we'd be
that
the
could
whole
treat
process.
For phosphorus and ammonia and things like that. And so, but then you're looking at more like a $2 or $3 million project, but it does set you up for being in compliance and having an updated system for the next, you know, 40 or 50 years.
So what you say speaks in favor of waiting as long as possible.
I need to learn another
till we know what the till we know what those regulations will be at some future date.
Well, we have an idea. Part of the advantage that we have in Milner and Pittsburgh is that we discharge directly to the river, and so we get sort of credits for dilution. So we're discharging to a dilute environment where, so I think that any future changes to the regulations, we're going to be able to meet them for now. But they are old facilities, and as the facilities get older, your costs for maintenance and so forth, you know, steadily climb. We would be having modern liners and modern infrastructure, plumbing and everything in the area where the lagoons are.
So how certain are you about this FEMA money? Because it sounds to me like a 25% match versus having a 50% match with the DOLA money. I mean, that the FEMA money, the FEMA money is a better deal for us,
Better deal, and then based on my conversations with Mo and Tetra Tech, that it fits under that criteria for FEMA funding.
And how much money will they, do we know what the limit is on the amount of money that they'll
75% provide? Of the cost.
But they don't have a top limit in terms of a dollar amount?
Or they don't have a pool to rank the projects and the worst compliance projects. Well, into that, which would also advocate the seepage study that we have some real records of what's.
But it sounds like this isn't necessarily a compliance project. It would be a hazard mitigation project because it's in the floodplain.
Yep.
Right.
It's resilience.
Yeah.
Both. Yeah.
So we don't know about a top dollar amount they'll fund.
I think this is well below the top dollar amount. Yeah.
Okay.
Because there's. I mean, you're talking about, you know, updates to infrastructure. I mean, there's a lot of...
Because the reality is, whatever the plan ends up being going forward, you're going to need to extend this DOLA grant again in order to get there.
Or I'm going to give it back.
Well, that's what I mean, if you didn't give
and
it
then
back.
And reapply. Or apply for, you know, a grant from USDA Rural Development. I mean, there's a lot of different routes that we could go. But the
question in front of us today is whether we want to repay the loan and whether we want to give the DOLA grant back, correct?
Or the better question is you know, and again, go back to CDPHE and then start issuing compliance orders and fines.
Yeah.
But that doesn't change the question about the money. I mean, that might be part of a revised project plan going forward.
Yeah, it changes the part of the money. So when they start, you know, $1,000 a day.
I think you should definitely give the grant or the loan money back. I mean, that seems like a no-brainer. If we are going to just be sitting on it until God knows when that we're ready to implement a project, that feels obvious to me.
I'm okay with that.
Yep.
Okay.
And then what about the DOLA grant? I mean,
I think we need to check with
Greg.
With Greg, yeah.
Well, so we've got an extension right now. Right.
Yeah, it's good through 2020.
But the we wanted to be careful about our relationship with DOLA and making sure that we are doing what we need to do. But
I owe them
keeping Greg in the loop about what's going on and getting his sense of.
And I owe them whether a progress we extend it or sit on it. That I need to do this week.
I think just tell Greg the truth; he'll tell you what's going to work or not work.
No, yeah, and we talk occasionally, so.
I mean, it sounds like we're fine with that, just having the conversation with Greg. And, you know, if he says, yeah, just give us back the money and reapply later.
That's what we'll do.
Yes.
So back to the seepage test then. So we have the broken pipe fixed and all that's good. We're all set. And we think that we're in the best place that we can be. If I have that seepage test done,
I hope so.
Yeah, no, I mean that's not your forte or my forte.
I don't know. So I don't know any reason why we would not be, and it was a result of that last seepage test that we discovered
the pipe,
the problem with the pipe. So. Yeah.
So I think we ought to have the seepage test done myself.
I don't fully understand what the possible outcomes of that are, because what I heard you say is we might be able to prove that we're in compliance for now, but that wouldn't necessarily change what we needed to do in the future. Did I understand that correctly?
I would say that based on the feedback that I've gotten from people who are experts in those matters, that the clay liners that we have today, there's no way they would meet seepage requirements. In, you know, rate of seepage.
But I mean,
but
on the other hand.
That's what I'm told.
Yeah.
On the other hand, buy some insurance for $2,000 that proves it.
And thinking about the customers that are having to pay for these things. I mean, I can sort of see it both ways.
I have to admit, I'm a little curious about it.
I mean, it'd be.
Curious about what?
About what the actual seepage rate is.
I mean, it's such a low cost in comparison to the project that it does seem to some degree like due diligence to demonstrate to those customers that in fact this needs to happen. But I don't know. I don't understand the science well enough to.
Well, the basic line is you got water going in and then you got treated water going out, and you know, and trying to make sure that the water going in and the water going out.
Right.
You know, you're not having a whole discrepancy of what's going out the bottom of the liner.
Other than from evapotranspiration.
Exactly, yeah. Right. So when they can figure that out. So I think we ought to do that this
week. For $2,000
or whatever we can get it done.
Yeah, well, it would be a different conversation if we were talking about $20,000.
Right.
Yeah, no, I would agree. It wouldn't be worth $20,000. Yeah. And especially at your point, what you're saying, well, you know, and Scott's point, you know, well, that's not going to work in the future. It's irrelevant. So wouldn't want to spend $20,000 on something.
Well, you don't want to spend $2,000 on something that's irrelevant, too.
Yeah, but, you know, like I say, you know, I sometimes don't believe that they have a scientific
justification. I guess the potential upside, even if it's an unlikely potential upside, is that the seepage study turns out we're not. We don't have seepage. Your seepage is within...
minimal.
Yeah. Then we have a good way to go talk to people at the CDPHE if there is some room for political pressure to be applied that would help resolve this. We'd have the data to back us up. So either way, I guess it would be good to know, and I'm willing to spend $2,000 on that.
So I guess you got three things. So let's do the seepage study. Let's pay back the loan, and then try to
talk to Greg about it.
Just hold on. We got it. We know and think that we have to do something. And the $2,000 or the seepage study probably needs to come out of our reserve and not out of the grant. We just keep the grant whole and intact. Yeah.
And then it sounds like you'll be exploring these other two funding sources to determine whether we should utilize those.
Yeah. So I owe Mo a list of projects that might qualify for FEMA funding, and through that process of inserting that information, I'll learn a little bit more about eligibility and so forth. But based on what I heard back from the consultant, that it's, he's like, yeah, that qualifies. So that's without knowing what he knows. And if we can get 75% paid and it's a $600,000 project, then we're looking at a similar amount on a new loan.
Yes. I just had one question. Do you think that since we're in the same situation with Milner, that if we're going to do a seepage study, that we might want to combine those two and have those figures at the same time that we're doing the seepage study down in Phippsburg?
Probably wouldn't be a bad idea. I mean, it's a separate fund, of course, but...
But we could...
We could have them do
We could
both.
Definitely maximize our spend with saying...
Maybe.
We're going to conduct
but
a test.
But on the other hand, you get a seepage study for Milner that may not be a valid study a year, 2 years from now, when we might actually be asked to provide that kind of documentation.
I just think it might give you a little more background on the clay liners, since you have two plants that are doing that.
And can I have literally no idea.
You know what? There's probably not much economy of scale of hiring the company. He's going to charge $2,000 for Phippsburg and then $2,000 for Milner.
But sometimes it's easier to find someone if you have a little bit bigger project, right? I mean,
and why hasn't Milner been brought up yet? I don't understand that.
Yeah,
I think part of the problem with P-Bird was that broken pipe, and that's part of the reason it came up. And they just didn't know it. And they just assumed it was seepage. And I don't know, because I wasn't here. But.
Which by then would be a lot of seepage by then if you had a broken pipe. So.
Yeah, a lot.
I mean, in Milner, remember, we had to fix just because of the solution to the pollution is dilution. So in Milner, we had to, we were dumping into this dry creek, which was basically an irrigation.
Same with P-Bird.
And then so we ended up having to pipe the effluent, the return flows, out into the river itself. Same with Milner. We had to pump it into the Yampa River instead of this little thing that we were doing so that it would be into a bore. That just bizarre to me.
And the irony of that is that we were discharging into a small stream rather than to the river, but that stream winds through the floodplain, through wetlands where additional treatment takes place before it discharges to the river.
Exactly.
And from a practical standpoint, it probably is better to discharge to the creek and get that. But I've tried to make that argument, but they don't want to hear that.
You know, my instinct is to take this one at a time. I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know. I agree with you. I think we just stay off Milner until we need to.
Okay.
Sounds good.
You could ask them a question, whoever. I mean, that doesn't sound like we need to do an RFP for this anyhow. Just find somebody to do the thing, yeah. And then you can ask them, well, is there some discount if we have them both done?
Okay. So seepage study, pay back the loan.
No, don't ask me to PAG anything.
No talking to them.
Okay, do you have what you need?
Yeah.
Great.
But we're far from knowing what the heck
No, I understand. I get that we're not done. I just meant for today.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I just need to continue to communicate with our enforcement person at CDPHE to try to give her a level of comfort that we're trying to make progress, and then I don't think that we'll run afoul of their process.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yep.
Thank
Sounds
you.
Good.
Thanks. So we're going to go ahead and first consider the request for a letter of support for a grant application, and then we'll do our PDR project request after. So will you guys tell us about this grant?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm happy to provide some background. So this is called the Regional Conservation Partnership Program.
Did you identify yourself?
Yes, sorry. Thank you.
My apologies. I'm Bryce Hinchman.
And we actually didn't get a letter from you asking for that letter of reference, by the way, did we?
Yeah, we did.
Was it in the packet? I don't
know. No, Kendra forwarded it to us.
In a separate email, which came with over the weekend. Okay, that's what that was, yep.
Right.
Eric gave it to us before lunch. Yep.
He also mentioned, though, that there might be a couple of minor, very minor changes.
Okay, go on. I apologize. I remember seeing the letter for the request for support, so...
My name is Bryce Hinchman. I'm a conservation manager with the Colorado Cattlemen's Agricultural Land Trust, and we're here today to discuss the Regional Conservation Partnership Program. It's an NRCS grant round that's kind of a unique opportunity for us this year. So through the 2018 Farm Bill, the NRCS now has $3 million per year to allocate specifically to this conservation program, but their funds need to be leveraged at a one-to-one or greater ratio. And the ultimate goal of this project is just to address documented resource concerns in a specific area. And for us, we have chosen Northwest Colorado, and specifically a six-county area within Northwest Colorado, at which we want to primarily conserve big game habitat, grouse habitat, riparian lands, and working landscapes. And we're approaching Rouse County today with a request of $2 million as a soft commitment over a five-year period between fiscal years 2019 and 2023. And we're here just to discuss the proposal at length or answer any questions you may have.
I know the attorney's office had some questions, but we are...
What is a soft commitment? Tell me what a soft is versus hard.
Because the real issue is obviously committing those funds, which we can't do without having
and that was something that Eric and I talked about, and under I think we've addressed it, and Linnea also put in some language as well into the letter to ensure that it's perfectly understood. We're not guaranteeing $2 million will be spent on cattlemen's projects. We just know from our historic work that it wouldn't be unusual to fund that much in the space of 5 years. Most importantly, though, we are making it clear in this letter that first the projects have to get approved. They have to go through our normal program. And just like any other project that comes forth, it will be assessed on its merits compared to the other projects. This is not a blanket, bring us whatever you've got, and we'll fund it sort of commitment. Soft meaning... Unless the project is appropriate to fund, it doesn't mean that we'll fund it. It's just
I still don't help me with soft.
Soft
means there's none.
Soft
unless
means
it gets
there's
approved.
Soft means
there's
we're expressing
intention.
Our support, and soft means that this is an opportunity for us to express that support in such a way that we can substantially leverage our taxpayer dollars. You know, our fund from the taxpayers. But it is understood we're not guaranteeing that the funds will be forthcoming. It's to say that should you provide us with approved projects that merit funding, we anticipate over the next 5 years that will be at least $2 million.
And so that... The way that you will receive these NRCS funds is after approval of each of those projects?
Each project has to get approved by the NRCS as well.
And then they'll match.
They kind of allocate the money we're asking for, and then as a project fits their criteria, we apply to them for that specific project for that specific pot of money.
Got it.
So it's the same with the PDR program. We'd apply to you, too, for that project.
They would be another partner.
Correct.
In conservation easements. Oftentimes we have multiple
correct
funders for conservation
easements. And sometimes PDR funds are awarded first. Sometimes other grants are awarded first. It just kind of depends. I think usually PDR tends to be the first player in a grant cycle, and which has been well received over the decades. Of
which
the
helps leveraging the second
yes,
by
absolutely.
Local commitment. So is this, I mean, and I think we've actually done some partnerships, some projects with RCPP, NRCS in the past, not necessarily this program. So is this a different program? That, I mean, RCPP probably has about 10 different programs that
So the previous one was FRPP, which is pretty similar, and ALE.
They're all through USDA.
The RCCP is just has different letters for a different pot of money, but it would be the same as the farmland easements that they've done in the past, and we have done many of those.
Right.
Throughout
yeah.
County.
I think that the moniker here is the regional concept. A region that we're looking at for conservation easements, and as you guys spoke, it's Northwest Colorado that mm-hmm. we're looking at.
So it looks like you have participation from Grand County, and then where else are you looking at when you're talking about the region?
So the overall geographic scope is Route, Moffitt, Jackson, Rio Blanco, Garfield, and Grand County. And just Route County and Grand County are the only two that have a dedicated PDR funding source. So
got it.
Those are the two that we've approached.
Yeah, the other ones we'd have to match with GOCO or the usual CPW right. private foundations, that kind of stuff.
So the RCPP generally has the same criteria for conserving property as the PDR program?
This particular program, not always, but typically with cattlemen's projects, I would say yes.
Okay.
Typically with their projects, yes. And the RCPP program, the parameters they focus on is very close to our resolution, which was remarkable to me that when we were talking about it before with Molly and Bryce. It's very close to our resolution as far as the intent of the program.
Well, I think with the change in language that we see presented, I'm comfortable with this.
Yeah.
I am too, yeah.
So
again, I wanted to make it clear that how much money,
right.
my email over the weekend, so just made it clear how much money we have and how much money we've put in and the leveraged dollars that we've had. So
right.
I think and then that Eric's changes.
And also there are some minor changes. The amount of acreage is actually in excess of 50.
It's 52, yeah.
52, not 45. And then also the combined value is more than that amount as well, more than 101 million. So those.
I'll be updating that a little bit.
Yeah, so Kendra will update those as far as the document you actually signed.
And so how do we do that? We include the final version in our online packet? Mm-hmm. Is that if we modify it right now?
Okay. That's my understanding, yeah.
Sounds good. I don't have any other questions. You guys?
So the only two places we're changing is the acreage and the total.
Total value.
Total combined value of the conservation easements conserved today.
Madam Chair, I move we approve and authorize your signature on the letter to sign on the support of the community of Colorado Cattlemen's Agricultural Land Trust grant letter of support, and with the draft that we have today, with the changes at the acreage and the total conservation easement values changed, corrected.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Very good.
Thank you.
Very much.
Thank you so
Excellent.
Much.
Thank you.
It's a great opportunity to leverage some serious dollars for our program.
Great. Thank you. I move that the Board of County Commissioners go into executive session to discuss PDR Project 196 Tier 2 approval. This executive session is being electronically recorded, but minutes of the meeting will not be produced. This is an executive session for the following purpose: to discuss the purchase, acquisition, lease.
Well, kudos rocking and rolling too, but you guys probably already know that.
We do know that. Thank you. Okay, anything else? Are we good?
Go get her.
Lovely.
Hey.
Thank you.
Are you all set? The time is now 1:24 p.m. and the executive session has been concluded. The following persons were present at this executive session: Commissioners Monger, Melton, and Corrigan, Deputy County Manager Dan Weinheimer, Kendra Alfieri, Linnea South and Claire Sollers. The board limited its discussion to the purpose stated in the motion to go into executive session, and no formal action was taken. We, board, would like to direct staff to place PDR Project 196 on the agenda for approval, for consideration of approval on December 10th. That's all.
Do we take formal action?
To approve.
It's just staff direction, right?
No, we don't need to.
Okay.
We didn't. I mean, we can, right? Can and okay. Don't need to.
No, I think that's fine.
So I think we're providing the direction
to staff.
Part of the 196 will have a name to it and the rest. So
right.
After when it becomes agendized, it becomes public. So
sounds good. All right.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Agendized. Are you going to practice saying that word? Creek Ranch special use permit. Would someone like to make a motion on that?
Sure. Madam Chair, I would move to table consideration of the King Creek Ranch special use permit to January 28th, 2020 at 1:30 p.m.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. That was the correct date and time, right?
Yes.
It's not what the original form said, so I think maybe there must have been an update. Which is fine. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't using
again,
the wrong one.
Off the website.
No, it's okay, because this one says January 14th, 2019, which would be definitely incorrect.
Well, they've asked for two postponements, so that may have been the first one, but
whatever.
The 28th.
It's not a big deal. Okay, so our second agenda item is to review the EIAF grant from DOLA for the development of the Rapid County Master Plan update. So we received your items and have reviewed them. I don't know if there's any background information you want to give before we ask questions, make comments.
I just want to make sure you did get Tom's letter from the grant review committee.
That was emailed.
Okay, good.
Let me see it. I think I've read it too. Let me figure out.
Anything else specific you want to talk about before we ask questions?
Not necessarily. I mean, nothing that wasn't covered in the application itself. I'm not sure. In preparing for this, I actually contacted Greg Winkler and asked him if he'd send me a couple of examples of successful grant applications in the past. The one thing I learned is there's a new form this year, you know, that it's all online, and some things are new, some things are not. So
so you couldn't just copy somebody else's.
No, what's wrong? Hey, I'm a big pirate, you know. No, it's so anyways, it's so what. And I'm not sure, like I said, I haven't done a grant in a long time, but mainly putting it in Word form and then just cut and pasting it into the online application form and hitting the submit button on the 2nd of December, and that'll get it on its way.
So do they not ask you to include the RFP? I feel like for a different grant application, we did have to include the RFP.
It depends on where you're at in the phase. You know, because when I talked to Greg and Hill a little bit about the project, it was that, you know, that we want to get going now and actually, you know, spend some of our money and in-kind money, you know, working up through that public engagement period. So the money that we get from DOLA is basically spent once the consultant takes it. And so we won't really have the RFP or the scope of services for the consultant until that time.
Got it.
And when I spoke with Greg about, you know, the approach that we should take, you know, he had two big pieces of advice for me. That was aim high, you know, so I did some research as far as those successful applications and what types of projects they covered. And the second bit was don't write a novel. So what you see is the result of that.
I'm looking at the grant application. The our match is listed as cash. We haven't identified in-kind, and it seems like we're going to have a lot of in-kind staff time spent. Is there some opportunity to reduce our cash match with in-kind by identifying in-kind costs?
Well, Yeah, Dan gave me a little heads up on that one, so I actually tried to quantify what those numbers were, you know, how much we've spent in in-kind this year, and just a estimate of next year, and I can include that information. And
so is it going to matter? I think the grant requires a 50% cash match.
Well, there's a line item for in-kind.
Right.
Yeah, no, I understand that, but it won't going to make any difference. I think these planning grants require 50% cash match. Yeah, that's what we...
Right. Right.
You can overmatch?
Yes.
Yes. Oh. What good's it going to do to record and keep track of
but
our
50% income? Of it has to be cash. Is that our understanding?
I believe so.
Okay.
That was my thinking based on the planning grants.
Right.
Well, then why would they even put
in
kind as an option?
There's other... Yeah. Well, they want to know as well, like, what you're actually putting forward as far as effort or any of those things. Like, how committed are you? I think that's really where this comes in. That's where, you know, overmatching and some of those things helps.
Got it.
You know.
So I can add what was done as far as in-kind. This year, the money that was paid to Slate this year for master plan services, I actually got an estimate from Slate as far as based on those duties and the attachment of the plan, the process plan. You know, as well as, you know, Christy and I sat down and kind of came up with some numbers, pre- and post-consultant, how much staff time would be involved in there. So we could be, you know, using our billable rate. I'll check with Sternad, make sure that's the number to use. You know, that's pretty consistent.
Might strengthen the application.
Yes.
Well, and really money towards Slate is not in kind. I mean, that's a cash match.
Right. But we can't spend money before we get
the grant. But any money spent to Slate after we receive the grant could count toward those.
And I think we're arguing that there's two phases, right?
Yeah.
You know, the engagement phase we're in now and that we're funding that. And then asking for more specific funding after, and then we might be funding Slate and
for the development of the
other planning work.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a question that really I didn't address in the application form. Because the way I presented it was that all the money from the DOLA would go just towards, or money from DOLA would go towards a land use consultant only, but we would be using some of that money to go towards Slate also. And the
that was what I brought up yesterday during our work session a little bit that you weren't here, was kind of like was commenting when Troy was here too. But and again, I don't know that we need it for the grant application, but somewhere down the road we're going to have come up with a budget on how much we're going to spend for Slate, how much we're going to spend for the consultant, and hopefully maybe not use the whole $200,000 cash either.
Well, and I think, I mean, I would agree with Doug in that if you go to this Section F project budget, I mean, it says, I guess I'm just curious whether this is going to be adequate for DOLA or not, because it says list budget line items. I mean, to me, are we really thinking we're just going to write a check for $200,000 to a land use consultant and that's all the cost that we're planning for this project? And if so, what basis do we have that that's the right number?
And I can check with Greg, because I don't know that they want to see lodging, travel, supplies, and, you know, professional services. You know, this was one of those areas where just from last cycle's application, this information wasn't there. I mean, there were, like, overalls, but there wasn't this breakdown of budget lines.
But that makes me think that they now want a breakdown of a line item. I mean, if they changed it and it's not the same as what it was before, they're probably looking for
I'll check with Greg, and I'll see what they're looking for. I mean, because is that the opportunity to put in the overmatch information that, sure, we're going to do the 100,000s up for your approval on the 10th of next month, but we've already chipped in X amount in kind.
You know, and again, back to the budget thing that I was talking about and Beth's talking about, too. I mean, really, we ought to have some number in there to what we're going to allocate out to that we're going to use Slate for. Right. And then we also need to have a number that we're going to use the consultant for. And based on the stuff that you gave us yesterday with the timeline and their tasks, we should be able to split out the consultant, the planning consultant, into those whatever those time frames are, just based on what we saw in your time frame of how much each one of those tasks is going to take on behalf of the consultant, somewhat a little bit. But we ought to have some way to know you're 50%, by the way, you're 50% done spending all your money for outreach, and you're 50% done spending money for the plan itself, rough draft, and then, you know, so I don't know.
We need a real budget at some point.
At some point in time, yeah. We're going to need a real budget.
Even if the grant doesn't require it.
Yeah. Plus, there's going to be some miscellaneous expenses when we potentially rent rooms. Like, if you'd have to use the community center, there's a cost for that.
Printing things.
Provide refreshments. I mean, there's going to be those miscellaneous costs that all add up over time, unless it's buried in the consultant's budget.
Well, I've got a $1,000 consultant support.
Oh, okay.
It's part of my budget from year to year, and so that's...
But we'd rather use it in this project and not take it out of your regular budgets. Keep it separated.
Sure. And I guess I don't know how they evaluate these grants or anything, so I'm not sure. But I guess if all we have listed in here is the consultant, then any money we put in for anything that's not the consultant, theoretically, doesn't seem like it would count as matching funds, right? I mean, so I think putting the full project cost in there makes sense, and having some opportunity for some of that money to go to things besides just the consultant.
Okay.
I mean, even if it was materials, right? But materials could be a pretty broad. And in my mind, the money we're spending on slate, and maybe I'm off base, but I think the money we're spending on slate comes out of this $200,000. Oh, I don't think it's in addition
absolutely
to this $200,000.
No,
okay. Well, I'll clarify that here. Because what Slate gave me as far as their ballpark master plan support would be between $15,000 and $20,000 for 2020.
So I think that's a line item in here. I mean, it's communications okay consultant, land use okay consultant.
And so when our planning consultant sees that we approved the grant for $200,000, he'll know that he can't bid $200,000. He'll have to bid
drop it down to 179.60.
Then we've got the not to exceed.
But I think we do want, I mean, as obviously it'll be a little bit rough at this point, but more of a line item budget before you submit this.
Yeah, okay. And like I said, I'll check in with Greg to make sure that that covers what they're looking for. Yeah, I'm going to call it.
And again, I think his comments, brief, ask high, and ask and be thorough and make sure you include all the things. That's kind of why it might be important to list out some of those other miscellaneous things, you know, 15% of the project, mm-hmm, you know, 5%.
And some of those examples that he gave me, I mean, they were all over the board. I mean, the highest one, just the grant request amount, you know, $337,000 from Adams County, $142,000 from Hilbert County, and
from Hilbert.
Hilbert. Yeah.
Which one's that?
Actually, they got
East of Colorado Springs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Elizabeth.
Isn't that part of Parker? Yeah, Parker. I mean,
Elizabeth.
No, is it?
No, Calvert County.
Yeah.
Yeah. Elizabeth is county seat.
That's what.
Parker's not in Hilbert County.
No.
Where's what's
Parker's in Douglas, isn't it?
Oh yeah. Okay, you're right. But it's right next to there.
Yeah. So. You just.
But I'm just saying, Hilbert County's population can't be any larger than ours, I don't think.
Well, they get some of that spillover from Tech Center. But
yeah, that's what I was thinking, too.
Hilbert is Kiowa, the population is 25.
They're right with us.
So it's about the same as that.
So they've got, anyway, they did a 142,000 master plan, but then followed that up with an application for 190,000, which was transportation plan, capital improvements, fund outlook, road hierarchy, land use forecast, traffic pattern analysis. Anyway, they're all over the place. Burfano County, 100,000. Clear Creek County, 100,000.
By the way,
Chaffee County, 125,000.
By the way, at one time we were kicking around the concept of a comprehensive plan as opposed to a master plan.
Semantics. That's where
was
we
that just
down
the
on
difference
that
in two words, or was there actually a difference in concept?
I think it's a difference in words based on DOLA. You know,
okay.
I think it may have a difference in concept based on the words, but I don't think it's
okay.
The concept.
So,
yeah.
Our master plan
will be comprehensive.
Thank you.
Yes. And the statutes refer to it as master.
Okay.
But DOLA refers to it as comprehensive.
And then before we get to making a motion, just while it's in the forefront of my mind, one of the marketing tools that I think would be awesome that if I could have would be a business card.
neighbors.
Yeah.
Because it's just
with
so
the survey link on
you already talked about that.
No, but I agree with you. I had the same
so
thought.
So nice to just be able to not talk
to be able to hand them out.
You know, basically got a link, you know, a little bit of information on it. I'd love to, you know, I'm sure I can hand out 100 of those.
I'm going to put you to the test.
You can give them out while you're walking down the parades.
I feel like when I go to the chamber board meetings and when I go to the EDC, you know, anytime it's like going around the room and giving updates, I do talk about the master plan and having something to hand. But having something to hand out,
it goes into their stack of papers,
right?
Because we do have that one pager handout now,
but I don't think we need to print so many of those. We could print a bunch of either quarter sheet or business card size.
For me, a business card, because that's what I can carry in my wallet. I'm not going to carry anything else with me.
Okay,
business card or postcard.
Okay, that's great.
I forwarded over that copy of your. The plan, your planning plan.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fine to have available for us too. Update 117. That's a little more thorough for somebody that wants to.
There really was the information.
Yeah.
Well, to me, I mean, ideally, the business card would have a link
to that same place. Yeah. That's fine. Yeah. So, are we signing this or are we approving it? And it's probably.
I don't think we have to sign it.
Are you ready for a motion?
Can I ask one question? You know, talking to Greg, you know, looking at the project plan that you mentioned, that it's over 2 years, essentially the 2020, 2021, was there any discussion about how that money gets allocated if we were to get money in 2020? Is it just 2020 or is it for both?
Okay. I will.
Can I see your plan there for a quick second? And then are you ready for a motion, Madam Chair?
I am. I think we wanted to include the revision of a more detailed, at least ballpark, more detailed financials before this is submitted, right?
Sure.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I would move to approve an application to the Department of Local Affairs for an Energy and Mineral Impact Assistance Fund grant in the amount of $100,000 to help fund a consultant to assist the community with the update of the 2003 master plan, noting that that application will include updated itemization of expenses.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you.
Thank you. All right, residential treatment facilities.
Here we go again.
At least we're going.
Yes. We are moving forward. So the next two discussion items hopefully will be the last you see it in this form as a discussion item. And
do you want to put your, microphone so we have Steve, just for Deanna's sake.
The goal would be to, the next time you see this, it would be in an actual draft form for amendments to the regulations. And we have not met with the county attorney at this point yet. We want to make sure that both you all and Planning Commission are on the same page. And it seems as if at this point you all are. So I'm just going to briefly go through why we were having this discussion. The law states that we need to provide reasonable accommodations, as you recall. And our current practice hasn't been that transparent, although we have been in compliance with the laws in processing these types of applications. So the question was, should we add a new line in the land use chart for a residential treatment facility, which through this process, it seems as if the preferred term would be residential care facility. And so when we last discussed this, we talked about the different regulations throughout Colorado, different counties that we researched. We provided you all that information. And this was the preliminary recommendations that the Planning Commission recommended you all supported. And that was a preliminary definition, which we would fine-tune with the county attorney. as well as looking into regulations for both a large and a small residential treatment, residential care facility. That a large facility would require a special use permit, and a small facility could be handled more administratively.
Be less than 12.
That would be less than 12, correct. So that was the number we were working with. And then we would look into different standards that would apply. We would take standards from our standard Section 6 of the regulations, which are pretty standard for most land use permits that you see. Also standards that revolve around residential character to make sure that it didn't look very institutional, it fit into the landscape, into the rural character of Ralph County. And then we've lightly talked about proximity to other uses and on-site live-in manager.
Before you leave that?
Yes.
We're limiting this to behavioral problems for individuals. What about individuals with physical disabilities?
So as far as that discussion, going back to the definition, that would be what it would cover. Healthcare facility providing therapy for substance abuse and mental illness or other behavioral problems.
So are we
problems
limiting ourselves too much? I mean, what if someone comes forward with a physical rehabilitation facility? Why would we be limiting it to behavioral issues?
That's what the law requires.
Okay. That's so, what put us into this place in the first place.
Correct. So right now in our land use chart,
addresses behavioral issues.
Right. And right now our land use chart covers the elderly. We do have a line in the land use chart for that. We don't have anything for physical therapy.
So the reason, obviously, I bring that up is because of STARS.
Well, that and Susan Meisen's old company, too.
That's what I was going to ask. Well, you know,
which so those are not behavioral issues. Are
yeah, well, like, not. You know, they have that facility over on
7th Street.
Who is it? It's not
Horizon.
Horizons.
Horizons.
Oh, okay.
So like so, that type of a facility.
Yeah, so somebody that's disabled.
But it would
challenged.
Still, that facility would still be under 12 people. I mean,
right.
And I don't
actually
know really what
that. I mean, that is a good point, because when we were originally talking about this, it was to fit into the law.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of times what you see is the small facilities in most other counties refer to group homes, where it covers a broader category. And we touched on that with Planning Commission. I don't think they would have an issue with that as well. And that's something that we can incorporate two separate definitions that supposedly we can suggest that the large be considered the residential care facility and a small full-under group home that covers also those kind of uses as well. And that might be a little more appropriate and more common to what you see. Just based on the conversation we have with Planning Commission, I don't think they were still kind of even struggling with locations for large and trying to really put even more bookends around a large facility out in the county. Their strong opinion across the board was that whether it is a large or a small, they felt that from a location standpoint, that they should be in close proximity to services within a growth center.
That's all fine and dandy, but somebody could do one on a 35-acre plot sitting out there and still be in close residential. I mean, be on County Road 42.
Oh, absolutely. So yeah, and that's actually the next slide. And they just wanted to make that a point that would be part of the review process.
So before we leave this, do we need to settle this right now?
Yeah, the definition part.
I think we do.
We're having
some
a little struggle with the Horizons type for somebody that's physically challenged as well as mentally challenged.
I think we did want to avoid something that looks this definition covering like a nursing home or something that's more like a hospital facility.
Correct.
But I think to Tim's point, are there other therapeutic, are there other types of
issues that you would be providing therapy for in a similar type of facility that we wouldn't want to necessarily.
And that's something we can add to that definition.
I'm not sure that I want to. I'm just wondering.
Who's it that had that group home definition? I mean, they took out this specificity and just.
This was taken from the state.
Right. Was it the city that had just that?
So the city's definition for a residential care facility covers that, and it provides housing for 24-hour care, unrelated persons who are in need of personal services, supervision, or assistance essential for sustaining the activities of daily living due to developmental disability, physical condition or illness, mental condition or illness, or social or behavioral problems.
I guess from, if I was an individual,
they're covering it all.
If I was Horizons mm-hmm. and wanted to do this, I would feel discriminated against. Wait a minute, you're allowing the people with substance abuse issues, but you won't take care of people that are developmentally disabled.
From a land use perspective, it probably doesn't really matter.
Make any difference?
Like which of those reasons?
Right.
I'm agreeing with you. Yeah, I agree too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it's a small group home, do we really care that much?
Now, the one thing I would...
If it's under 12, yeah, exactly. And as long as it looks like a home and there's on-site management and things
right.
like that,
yes.
So you would be in support of tweaking that definition to cover...
I'd like to tweak the definition to include Horizons.
Okay.
For them to have
developmental disabilities.
Developmental disabilities.
And I'm hearing that you all agree.
I'm really unsure about physical therapy because I can see where that could get abused pretty quickly.
Right. Because I feel like that could also
fit
under our...
pretty quickly, you know?
And
people that have blown out knees, all of a sudden we have to allow them to have their group.
Yeah. We can certainly do that. And I'm sure, you know, having Eric and Linnea weigh in also may have some thoughts on this also.
But I think what you're hearing from us is the inclusion of developmental disabilities
for
in
sure.
this list.
Okay.
Yes.
And maybe that's
is that definition.
Yeah.
Okay. So when we brought this to Planning Commission, this was the overview of what they were recommending, and you know, definitely that proximity to services and other facilities. Other facilities meaning like a density requirement.
So how are you going to incorporate that first one, the proximity to services?
Yeah, I have the same question.
Next slide, but it would be...
Okay, that's fine. I'll hold my question. That's fine.
So this is just a summary, and then I'll break it down to what that actually is.
Because I read
like.
The minutes, and I'm going, wow.
Yeah. How are they going to do that?
This is on, and this is off.
Yeah. And it's something that I found that a lot of the other counties require. And it's basically like a report that they would submit as part of their application.
The proximity issue.
Proving that...
they have adequate access.
Exactly, yeah.
Sure, the difference is, though, is that... I mean, we are different than these other counties because we haven't allowed any of those services out in the outlying part of the county. They don't exist.
Let Christy give her summary and then go in detail to each of you as she requested.
Also, they felt very strongly about having licensing requirements, which they would have to submit those sort of things as part of their application as well to make sure that they're legit. And they're not saying they're a rehabilitation service or a facility.
So wait a minute, we're going to be issuing presumably an SUP.
Correct.
We would have a license.
The state has a license.
The state
has. State licensing.
So yeah, so they would have to provide documentation to make the application.
Right.
Yeah. Compliance with building and fire codes, language that if the use goes away, it can revert back to uses by right. We did briefly touch on that here, and again, that would be handled as part of their narrative.
We're going to have a reclamation clause?
We could, but I think what Planning Commission was envisioning, and I guess what my thought on that would be, is that part of their proposal would be uses that they're not building these new buildings that look institutional or can't be reverted into uses by right if the use is no longer
there. If STARS goes away.
What kind of a 30-unit facility would be appropriate for use by right out in the county.
Well, that would be part of the review, wouldn't it? Like, so if you were...
But to Tim's point, wouldn't it necessarily just be denied on that grounds?
Probably it would. If something was coming through a large facility with 30 rooms, can you really make that look like a residential... part of...
So then why are we bothering
if we're... 12 units.
Yeah, why are we bothering with this if we are not going to allow anybody to do it?
But maybe they can. I mean, if they were proposing a lodge and it had that ranch compound look and feel to it with proper landscaping and, you know, it looked like a larger house... versus a, I mean,
I
but at the same time,
cows put out there.
But they would.
But why isn't that captured under that last bullet, the visual character? I mean, rather than the, I just think I think you're going to really struggle to evaluate something and say that it's going to be able to revert to a use by right. I understand what you're trying to accomplish.
Right.
I just think we're necessarily.
Well, this is the list that we've always talked about, was if we allow this,
right,
the use goes away, what are we going to do? Tell them to tear the building down? That's what Doug said, reclamation. Well,
we're
dealing with, right, you know, that pirate trucking building south of the power plant?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been sitting vacant for a while. Pirate trucking,
they were
approved under accessory to coal haul. And the coal hall's gone away.
Right there off of 27, off right there where the other road 51C or something. Right before you get to the power plant, before you get to the highway, off to the left, right there. There's a big warehouse there, trucking warehouse where they worked on the trucks.
So how do our regulations or other counties' regulations contemplate that issue?
It would be basically a written report, like the city requires a written report on, they go above and beyond with that language.
But we don't have this anywhere else in our regulations.
We don't.
This is the only place we do that.
Yeah. This would be proposed to be,
right.
Yes. It would be unique for sure.
Well, it's not like we want to make, I'm like Tim, I don't like we make this easy. And again, if we have to figure out a reversion plan.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it just seems to me like maybe we want to define that a little more, because otherwise any of these that came before us would be automatic. I mean,
right.
Because
and we
like
can
Tim
certainly
said, what kind of
do more research and also
person.
I'm sure Eric will chime in on this as well. I think the intent is good from Planning Commission. I could see, I think this kind of stemmed from a discussion of our PUDs, frankly, and that's where I think this recommendation was coming from. For example, like the home ranch, and you know, like this discussion came about that it was for sale. And at the time it was for sale. It has sold. But it's a PUD, and PUDs, as you know, are specific to that use. So either somebody buys it and they continue with that same exact use, or you have to change the PUD if you can.
So if somebody buys the Hot-Speed Roadhouse and decides just to turn it in, they're just not going to operate it with any of those uses anymore, what happens then?
They're
just going to live their single family, you know, mom, dad, two kids.
I mean, you could just let the single family, the use would be able to be... if you want it to be for catering or a wedding facility or something like that, you wouldn't be able to do something like that.
But that's a risk to the property owner.
That's true.
Right. So we could beat this to death. Maybe we've identified a big issue here.
Yeah.
We're probably not going to solve it right now.
I support the intent of what you're saying here,
right,
but I think we have to be really careful about the language because, again, why are we bothering with this if it's not possible for someone to do it.
Right. So the other side, though, would be if somebody comes in and they got the 10,000 square foot house and they want to do that.
Right.
I mean, the house is already there.
Right.
I mean, so they could come in and you do this thing.
Right. That's a good point, yeah.
I mean, and you could put 20 people in there and have a large scale facility there.
Yeah.
So I guess it could still revert to a use by right, but that use by right is going to end up being a residence.
Well, I mean, it
or a
seemed,
guest ranch.
It seems.
Well, we have to be specific. At least in the SUP, when we issue the permit, we'd have to be very specific. If this use goes away, this is what has to happen, or this is what can't happen.
Right. Well, and it sounds like what you're referring to is more the design. And
correct.
So, you know, you're saying the language, right? But maybe the language says something like the design is such that other uses by right would be possible on the property, or I don't know exactly how you phrase it. But
well, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
That would be a good idea.
And that because kind of, that gives us some more leverage to kind of evaluate.
Yeah, and I guess you don't really need that if you are going to be requiring some sort of visual character evaluation as
or
part
if it's
of
under
the
that one.
Yeah,
right.
Okay.
I mean, they can always, whoever the new owner is, they can always apply for a new permit. Okay, that operation failed. Turn
we're
in the CPSUP for the new one. But in situations like Pirate, it's just they went away and it was only approved under mining accessory because there is no other line in the land use chart, you know, for that type of operation.
So it sounds like we're in support of the intent, but we want to be careful about the language we use.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll give you some options. And roll up more of an explanation.
Did we finish your list on the previous one?
Yes, so it was small with single family. I guess we just didn't say it out loud. But single family and no external modifications that would alter the single family. And then the last has to do with the ranch compound and screened from neighboring properties. So the recommendation, the further recommendation and what that would look like from Planning Commission was for small, it would be reviewed for 12 or fewer persons as an administrative permit. It would be allowed in essentially all residential districts where a single family house would be allowed, but they wanted a standard in there that it would have to be close to a growth center.
And what does that mean?
So I think it would be piggybacked onto the second bullet. The applicant would need to demonstrate that necessary public facilities and services for the occupants can be provided, including but not limited to water supply, sewage disposal, fire, police protection, and transportation. They would submit that as part of their administrative permit for staff to evaluate. So essentially, a location all the way up north somewhere, could be in a residential district, but are you close to services and how close are you to responses from the fire district or police call, support services? So that is standard language. I did find in other regulations.
What's transportation mean?
Yeah, I support the concept.
Transport, like fire and police transport?
No, we're talking about...
Which one?
We don't want individual
where it says
people
transportation.
Driving to this place. So you're talking, he asked what transportation is.
Oh, okay.
So I think we need...
We may not want it, but if we're going to require that anything be built next to a bus route, well, great, we're not building it.
Well, no, they have to provide a bus to. That's how they mitigate it. They have their own bus.
Oh, yeah. All right.
So that's...
So it would be evaluated... based on that, along with a neighborhood density requirement. Planning Commission didn't give there wasn't a consensus on the amount of feet from another facility. I think it was Gunnison County had 750 feet from another facility.
Why do we care about that?
Because it has to be on 35 acres to begin with, doesn't it?
No, not for small. Small can go in like Steamboat too.
Yeah,
so the thought would be, do you want three group homes to be located?
Rename the street.
So of another...
Doug Munger Boulevard.
Another facility, that means
just
another...
Mentally handicapped.
Right. It's to prevent the proliferation of these kind of uses all in one location. That's not a common one. Eagle County and I believe Gunnison also had something like that, but I didn't find that elsewhere. Planning Commission liked it, but didn't have a strong feeling on what that distance or the appropriate distance should be.
How many houses away is 1,000 feet in Steamboat 2, for example?
So that would be...
3 football fields. It's a long ways.
Yeah.
So basically, you would essentially have one, maybe two, in a Steamboat 2 area.
Got it.
Yeah.
I'm all right with that then. So yeah. I guess go back up the top one, allowed in, but close to gross in. I am still struggling with close. And so, you know, and I don't
it can't be that ambiguous. I think that's too.
Well, actually,
the language in the master plan, off the top of my head, what is the language? The evaluation, the standard, because we talked about it once before. It's kind of recurring.
Like 3-3-A?
Yes.
The vicinity of a growth center?
The vicinity of a growth center.
But that's not a regulation. I mean, that's...
It's in the master plan.
But it also says, and under the applicable sub-area plan for that area. So that's defined. That vicinity is defined in the sub-area plan. It doesn't help us here.
Yeah.
I think close to a growth center is tough because I think the second one...
Yeah,
should cover the idea of being
I agree. I think the second bullet, providing that documentation, they're providing that information of how they are going to provide the necessary public facilities through in the narrative. And that would be a judgment call on staff for a small, because it's administrative, that language would be suggested for a large as well, which then would be considered through the review of the large facility.
So I get sewage disposal, but water supply, that's just up to the division engineer, right?
Well, but they're still going to have water supply even for the number. Well, they're going to have water supply.
Well, before they even make the application, they're going to have to talk with the division, and that's going to be a yes or no based on their...
I guess it's just a referral. We're just going to get a referral from the division engineer saying, yeah, this is okay.
Correct.
So, they're going to need to demonstrate the necessary public facility to get the administrative approval.
And as we know, that probably would limit a lot of the county for something like that anyway.
So, Beth's on the same point on the first one, close to.
Mm-hmm.
I think we ought to draw a donut or something if we're going to say that. We just physically draw it, call it. Needs to be 10 miles from the, 5 miles from the city boundary or something.
But, what about Milner?
No,
is Milner an appropriate location?
That's why
because it's not a growth center.
Yeah.
It's not.
But we're
going to argue that it's close to
a growth center.
But I don't think we want to argue that. I think we want to make it clear what
that's
we
all
mean
conservation
by that.
Easement.
Not how Plus somebody...
We don't need an attorney arguing.
Well, we don't need someone coming in here and going through this process and saying, well, no, I thought Milner was appropriate, right? Mm-hmm. And we say, well, no, it's not really. I mean, if we have an area we're thinking about, we should draw a picture of it. And if we don't, we should scrap it.
Yeah.
Sure, would that facility up on Lynx Pass be considered close to a growth center above Stagecoach?
You know,
in my opinion, no. Based on
the only thing tangible that I can think of that we've used in the past is a 5-minute response time for emergency services.
I like that. At least it's defined.
Black and white.
Yeah, I like the defined part.
Yeah.
Close is just
refer to the fire district.
Yeah.
Yep.
I guess what is our concern in terms of? I could think of what it might be, but what is it we want to address with this idea of being close to a growth center?
Well, we don't want, look at when the sheriff was asking for new deputies, remember his narrative about how far away they can be and not get to it. So
right.
We certainly don't want people dying because we...
Can't get the fire truck out there either.
Yeah.
So if it's about emergency services, we could define it that way.
Right.
I mean... Is there something else?
Oh, sure. There's all these roads that we don't plow on Saturdays and Sundays.
Right.
And we just permitted a bunch of people to be living at the end of this county road that we can't even get through the truck to.
And we've got that standard, at least in LPS, that it has to be on the top two maintenance categories in order to...
So I think just in drafting the regulation, the language, we should... be clearer about
I like both of those two.
Yeah,
I like
I think so.
5 minute or 10 minute, or, 5 minute response time or something, and or on a tier 1, tier 2 road structure, maybe both.
So for the issuance of special use permits, in this case, we're talking about an admin permit, there would be a referral to the county sheriff.
And the fire district, yep.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't just be county. I mean, because if they were in the proximity of Steamboat.
Right, and we based.
Like, I assume the Steamboat Springs police would respond in Steamboat, too.
Right, I guess it would be based on where it's being located is who we send the referral to. So yeah. we will send it to the fire district that covers that area.
But I've never seen a time that we've done a referral to the county sheriff for anything.
But again, it's not whether the sheriff's going to be able to respond in 5 minutes. It's whether you can physically travel there in 5 minutes.
Right, right.
I mean, whether the sheriff's got somebody
on
duty.
One of the coal routes we did also, because they patrol the road. It was for one of the more recent coal haul routes. Mm-hmm. They were renewing their application, and the sheriff is the one that patrols that road.
So we have some process already in place to evaluate response time.
Correct.
In terms of this type of application?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We can also, that would be, we can require the applicants to submit part of their application, that they're providing that information, and we send that as a referral. Hey, is this true?
And what we really don't want is someone like at the end of an unmaintained road. I mean, it's not safe for these people to be in that situation.
Yep.
Well, if they do that at some place at the end of, they're going to have to go through additional mitigation, sprinklers or things like that, too.
That makes
maybe
sense.
Maybe could be mitigated by having a
on-site smoke caps available to go.
Yep.
And I think that's why, I guess I didn't carry it over from the other, but we do have a standard condition of approval, but I think it should be a standard also that they know that they have to meet building codes and fire codes.
Yeah.
Right, I didn't include it in that one. It was in the prior
slide. Yeah, it was
slide.
On the previous slide.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's actually what happened with the Lynx Pass application. Although they were sort of hands-off from our standpoint at that time, they still had to meet building codes,
right,
and such. So it just puts them up front that they also need to speak with those entities. And that's also covered in that second bullet, because they're going to have to talk with all the different departments and agencies.
I think we're going to also need a more completely defined transportation.
Yeah.
It would have to be something along the lines of methods of transportation for clients.
Yes.
But I don't know what exactly that would look like, but just like so says, we don't want 30 people driving their cars back and forth there.
Yeah.
So how do we...
I mean, we have conditions in some of our snowkiting permits and the rest that they have to have provide transportation.
We did that at the Buffalo Ranch.
Yep.
Right?
Lucky Eight,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But there's got to be some predictability for the applicant. What does that mean, transportation?
Okay, shuttles. And
right.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right.
Got it.
Okay. Did you have anything else?
I think same comments on the next one.
Yeah,
obviously
okay.
The close to the growth summer.
Okay, yep.
And then,
is there a maximum number of people that are being...
We don't have one right now. And I feel, and I can confirm this, you may want to put a max. However, I think that may be something that would be dictated from environmental health and from the Division of Water Resources for
and
how many bedrooms.
The building department. I
yeah.
mean, it falls into a different category.
Exactly.
Once you get
I'll
above
confirm
a
that.
Sure. There's a building code that'll cover a 300-person facility. I mean, you can build to that code.
Let's see if anybody
right.
else has a cap.
Well,
yeah.
But at some point,
you're going to have water for your own fire hydrants. By that, I mean your own.
Yeah.
Especially if you're not going to be on a public system.
Can you imagine
right.
us
right. Yeah.
approving any kind of a 300-person facility in the unincorporated?
No,
park?
But I
no.
think it would. There would be limiting factors. I mean,
right.
That's point. So maybe it's just checking in with those other entities and seeing what that number
I'm almost
would
certain
be.
That is the case, but I will have that information for you.
I guess for me, intuitively, I can't imagine a 50-person facility.
But then also, I mean, for argument's sake, I guess you
yeah,
can. You can propose that, right? But how are you going to make that fit into the rural...
All of the other standards.
Yeah, the rural, like, landscape of Route County.
Again, I'd be going back to predictability for the applicant.
Sure.
Don't come here with an 80-person, because we're not going to approve it.
Right. Well, and I think we'd give them the master plan, too. It's usually, read the master plan and see if that's something you think that will apply.
I'm not sure I'm in favor of putting that number out there, because that kind of asks people to come up to that number as well.
Correct.
So I don't know what to do with it, but it works.
I'll look into the limiting factors, because I think that definitely...
Because there might be an obvious number based on the other limiting factors, like water and building code. And
right, I think water
state
is
licensing.
The big one.
Yeah, state licensing.
And while we're just thinking out loud here, it seems to me that there ought to be some relationship between the number of people that are at that facility and the size of the property that it's on.
That's what this first one is.
Yeah.
Size of facility in relation to the size of the property.
I want that.
All right.
They're way ahead.
Here's the part of that one.
It was probably your idea last time.
Let's keep going.
Yeah. And I think that's it that we had.
So the next steps are drafting some actual regulations.
Right.
And really, and actually looking at it next time in a draft form that would go into the regulations. And after it's been reviewed with county attorney to make sure there isn't something that we're missing.
Yeah, let's not do anything illegal.
Yeah. And then we'll schedule it as discussion and possible adoption. So, because you guys have, like Christy said, the Planning Commission have been pretty close, and so I don't see most.
That's what I like. Pops up. Planning Commission is well. Yeah, we can allow these things in all of the districts. Are all of our Planning Commission members aware of what our zoning districts are? That, when they said, "Well, we don't want them in the mining district," I went, "Well, that's a good idea."
That's great.
It's like.
I mean, it has been noted that there is some education for Planning Commission needed, and that may be a perfect example of why.
I think he was trying to be a little...
Oh, was he being funny?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, I can buy that. That's good. I'm all good with that.
And everybody got a good chuckle, and anyway.
So, in the minute, let's just note when someone's joking.
I will.
So,
are you on that? Yeah, well, that should be easy.
We're never serious. Actually, is pretty much
Sarah actually was not there that night to reflect that in the minutes, and it's probably my fault. I forgot to.
So before
let
we
her
completely
know.
Move on from the subject, and this is probably a really stupid question. I specialize in that
question.
Impact fees on this kind of a facility, is that?
Well, first we need to, have impact fees. We need to have impact fees.
You think that?
No, I don't think so.
Well, we can't assess impact fees unless
we would do them just like we would a special use permit for the mine. We would go through and address the traffic, and if they're not going to have traffic, what else are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about traffic.
Until we have a nexus study, we can't assess any other impact fees anyway.
We can do direct impacts just like we did at the mine when they paid for our extra surfacing at County Road 27.
And that would be as a part of the SUP.
Part of the SUP.
But
it was right directly then. It's not impact fees. It's paying for and being part of a partner in our maintenance objective. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
I mean, so that's where we would do that. I mean, it's just no different than, the old the hot springs up there, too,
But the ability to demonstrate that was needed compared to, a mine operation seems limited.
Well, yeah. You're right.
I mean, because it's residential. I mean, it's passenger vehicles. Even if every single person is driving one, and there's 50 trips a day, you still probably can demonstrate the impact.
The nexus study is...
Right.
So we could have still done that with the Lucky 8, too. I mean, we could have, we got to that point.
We would have
said, hey, well, no, the road's too narrow before we even allow you to do that. With that type of mitigate, with your types of impacts that you're bringing, you need to widen the road. And that way...
Okay, but that would be right then.
That would be right then, and that...
That's the best way to handle it. I'm fine with that. How about sales tax?
On what?
These treatment facilities, you look at what they charge these people. It's an incredible amount of money. I mean, thousands of dollars.
Do we collect sales tax?
$40,000 for 2 months of treatment.
Do we collect sales tax, I'm thinking of what would... because we collect sales tax in the city as well as outside of the city.
Well, anybody,
correct?
Are there any?
So it's above our pay grade.
What you can collect sales tax on.
Colorado Department of Revenue, we have the same rules as Colorado Department of Revenue.
Right.
So if they're shirking us, they're shirking the Department of Revenue.
Okay.
So the Department of Revenue would be in charge of making sure that they...
deciding who should pay sales tax.
Exactly, and for what.
And presumably in conjunction with their license, there would be that type of review.
So the bigger question that we would have, is this a residential unit or is this a commercial unit for property taxes? So it probably would...
It's probably commercial, right?
Not if it's a home.
When we get an application, we always send a referral to the county assessor, so they know that we have an application in. I can't say so I know or I'm certain what happens thereafter, but
it is.
It's a future question. It's not a land use issue.
All right, here's a very short version from the state of Colorado. Colorado generally does not impose sales tax on services. That's a pretty short answer to your question.
Sure, but there's a question, are they providing just services, or is it services and lodging?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think we would be the ones that would determine that, though.
Like Doug said, it's above our paper.
All right, let's keep going. Okay. Recreational facility amendments.
Now, by God, we're going to charge some tax.
Now we have the ability.
Even still, we don't get to decide.
I know.
Yeah.
So we brought this discussion before you because at the time, the only trigger, or actually right now, currently, the only trigger for a higher level of review for a recreational facility is overnight accommodations, regardless of the size, intensity of use. Right now, across the board, it's all the same level of review if you have overnight accommodations. The other issue is...
Yes. Recreational facilities without overnight accommodations are...
Conditional use permit. Right. And when you look at that list, which is on the next slide, I mean, there's a lot of different uses probably should be required or reviewed as an SUP, like STARS was only reviewed as a conditional use permit. And then also if a use is not listed in the land use chart, it's not permitted, so that kind of opened up discussion a little bit more, talking about some of these like agritourism type operations if they have overnight accommodations or want overnight accommodations. And also, if the use isn't listed, sometimes it falls into Doug's favorite category as a PUD. So a rec facility and a PUD traditionally has just been used as this catch-all land use category. It's not transparent. Also, something we're going to add to this list later on the slide is wedding facilities. So anytime a wedding venue has come in for a permit, it has been reviewed as a rec facility and
without overnight accommodations
and reviewed as a conditional use permit.
So that's going to stay the same?
So part of the recommendation you saw in there will be a new line in the land use chart for a wedding venue. So it's not just grouped into this rec facility, which it really isn't.
Do they have to ride horses at the wedding?
Yeah, of course. If they knew what they were getting into, they would know it wasn't recreation.
It's for the reception.
Exactly. So although this started off as a...
Some people regard getting married as a recreational activity.
I'm sure they
do.
I do
it at least once a week.
Hey, I'd be curious, which would be for Doug to once again articulate why it is that he hates PUDs.
Well, what happens with the home ranch up there? So we have a PUD, and now the PUD is going to go away. And so now the guy's got to come back. The guy's got to come back in and say, well, is living in it as a house really allowed?
Yeah.
So you got to come in and change the PUD to be able to live there.
I mean, you're changing the PUD, which is also unique, you're changing the zone. Like, it's a zoning category.
Site-specific zoning district.
Yeah, so now you have spot zoning.
And then the people that own these PUDs, they think that they have a blanket ability to do whatever they want to.
Right.
And they just get come in and just get a blush look at it. And, you know, we're already allowed. We should be able to do anything that we want to without mitigating the impacts of the difference of the impacts of what they had in the old PUD based on to what their new PUD.
Yeah.
But we could just say no.
No, absolutely.
Absolutely.
But once it becomes zoned, it's no longer. That's why we've stayed away from PUDs.
It's zoning.
Because it's a zoning, yeah.
Okay.
And I don't think any of those are new, but that's our list of PUDs that, you know, haunts Doug to this day. You have the Strawberry Park Hot Springs, the La Vista, Sky Valley, Lake Catamount, Glen Eden, the Inn, Hans Peak Roadhouse, and the Home Ranch.
Let the record show that I never approved any of those.
Yes. I believe that's well before most of our times, apart from Doug, I'm sure. You might have had
I think we did Bella Vista.
Catamount.
Let's see. Anyway.
All right, let's get on task here.
Yes, Beth. So as you know, this is an opportunity to assess overnight accommodations. That's where we left off. Just to recap, this was the list that we showed you of our rec facilities. That list incorporates uses that were all approved under CUPs before we had the new line in the land use chart that included overnight accommodations as an SUP. So you can see, you know, the inequality here of some of these uses, where like Stars was reviewed as a CUP, and the question became, should that be reviewed the same as a Green Creek Ranch, which is more of a private facility, doesn't have shared accommodations. The summary up until this point is that both BCC and the Planning Commission agree that whether facilities are public or private, it shouldn't matter. The standards should be based on intensity of use. So this went before Planning Commission. This is the direction you gave before we went to Planning Commission, and that was to research and propose amendments for uses that could have overnight accommodations. So we looked at our bed and breakfast, our guest ranch and agritourism enterprise land use categories, and then also draft language on intensity of use, specifically on size, amenities offered, and review how primary and accessory uses are determined. So we took that to Planning Commission, and this is what Planning Commission recommended. They agreed with the B&B standards that you came up with.
Is that a B&B in Round County?
It is. We don't have any pictures. So that is totally like the one castle on the mountain. No, that's the one on the mountain. Next to the gondola.
Oh, yeah.
The Victorian.
That has the Ronald McDonald on the deck?
No, not that one.
Not that one.
Oh, right below
next
it.
To it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Which I believe was...
Who the hell would put Ronald McDonald? Never mind.
True story, it's there.
It's been there a long time.
Yeah. But that Victorian B&B, by the way, was brought in on a truck or something from
Kansas,
right?
Yeah. I worked on
So there's a little history there. So they agreed with eliminating the requirement that all the rooms have to be located in the primary residence. They were not comfortable with having more than 4 guest rooms within the principal dwelling unit, which is from the old standard, so that was the limiting factor. But they were okay
Right now, if we approve a B&B, it's 4
correct
maximum.
Yeah, yeah. And they did say 1 secondary unit that can be part of the B&B or not.
Do you mean part of the primary? What do you mean part of the B&B?
So either it would be part of the permit,
Or like the caretaker
or,
could live there.
Or if you
could have your on-site manager live.
I got you.
Correct. Yeah. It doesn't have to be in the principal dwelling unit.
Now I understand.
And then B&Bs have an on-site manager. And then they actually didn't feel the need to have a limit on the length of stay. Remember, it was originally proposed to you all to have like a max stay of 14 days. That seems
I don't know why it matters. I mean,
and that's how they felt
it just
too.
Becomes a long-term rental.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, 30, it becomes non-taxable. 14, it's sales taxable too. That's how the Colorado works, is anything under 30 days.
I wonder if that's why we would see that in some of the regulations, they had a max day.
Yep. Well, that's why it is 30, because that's what state sales tax laws
are. Okay.
So my question...
Yeah, so Eric might have an opinion on that.
Well, on when they were talking about that, we had a discussion about the cooking places for the B&Bs.
I saw that in there.
It's required, right?
So...
Oh, okay. You're going to get to it. Okay.
So the cooking, so it would be under E, Doug. Oh, no, not E. Sorry. E. Yeah, there's two E's. So. E and E. E and E says, no cooking facility shall be allowed in the guest rooms of the principal dwelling of the bed and breakfast.
Okay.
Meaning you can have in the secondary dwelling unit.
Yeah, okay. That's all right.
But there's no requirement that meals be served.
Correct.
There is no requirement, but there is a standard, and this is from the original the current standard, which is the first E. No cooking facility shall be allowed. No.
You mean the second E?
Sorry, second E, thank you. Meals may only be served to occupants of the bed and breakfast.
So you can't, be operating a restaurant?
Correct, yeah. So that's the intent of that. The bold were the added language that I believe we discussed last, the first D, we discussed last night. The external modifications to the building shall not alter the single-family residential character of the building. And then they also removed the maximum stay for any one guest shall not exceed 14 consecutive days.
But someone has to answer the question whether or not that impacts our ability to collect taxes.
Right. So, and then the last they added,
which planning commission wouldn't have any context for. So
correct. No. Yeah, we may want to put that back in.
I guess the question, though, again, is, I mean, I think the same way the planning commission did. Why do we care?
I would agree. I think the only reason we would care is if there's something related to tax collection that we need to be considering.
Okay, I can definitely.
And bed and breakfast remain as residential assessment, is that correct?
Property tax-wise.
Yes.
Well, bed and breakfast are subject to sales tax.
But they're residential assessed, not commercial.
Right.
Okay.
Well, that's a good argument for making sure that we limit the number of rooms
to make
on
sure
site so it doesn't just become a hotel by a different name.
I like that too. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah. So we're good with the four and then the one secondary.
Yep.
With the meals, the no cooking facilities and the guest rooms, but you can in the secondary. And all the other standards are our current standards. And then we added the owner or manager shall be a full-time resident of the bed and breakfast establishment. We just changed that language slightly because it said that they had to also be in the principal building.
And that's, sorry for interrupting, that's what we saw with that Tranquility bed and breakfast on 43A, is that, and a source for the appeal, when Lynn Holiday came in, and that was because they had their attached secondary dwelling in it. It was part of the operation, or what's the word that we use?
Establishment.
But allowing this, or the way it's proposed, that could be detached. The neighbors in around 43A tried to say that all we're doing is just creating a way around our vacation home rental regulation. But the response from us was on-site manager. It's different because there's an on-site manager.
I think an on-site manager mitigates the vast majority of concerns related to short-term rentals, in my opinion.
And we keep getting beat up by our attorney and you guys about our stance on nightly rentals anyhow, so it's just like...
Well, it's just like you said. I mean, it'd be great if we could find a way to encourage people to go the B&B route.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know if this is on there, Christy, but one thing about the on-site manager that helps is if there's a sign with the phone number on the front.
Yeah.
So if you're a neighbor and there's a complaint, call them first.
Great. Tell us about the wedding venue.
So I briefly already went over that, but the recommendation would be to create a new line in the land use chart. Currently, a wedding venue is processed as a rec facility, as a CUP. the recommendation by Planning Commission, and since they have seen many of these, they felt that this actually should be a CUP.
An SUP,
yes.
Why?
I'm seeing if you guys are paying attention.
I'm surprised.
I think because, you know, they have become larger type operations with potential for larger impacts. I'm thinking of Dolce.
La Jolla Dolce.
Yeah, La Jolla yeah. Dolce, which is up
north, right?
Yep, 129, Flying Diamond. There's a lot of traffic that comes in and out of these facilities.
Yeah, especially, I mean, if you allow there's, more than one.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, one
noise
of
has become an issue. So that was their recommendation, that they feel that that it should be its own line in the land use chart and should be a special use permit.
And I can add to that also that this may be the only CUP that I've seen. There's opposition every single day.
But they have the opposition has the ability to appeal the CUP
yes.
up to us.
That is true.
And they've never done that?
Right.
They have not.
No. Mm-mm. And
the last wedding venue actually was denied. That was the
and one. They still didn't appeal.
On 131, they did not appeal.
Well, the opponents did appeal.
Right.
Oh. But the applicant
didn't
appeal. Yeah.
I'd be okay with keeping it as
Wildflower
CUP,
Meadows.
But
that's kind of my instinct is fine. I mean, you know, the Planning Commission knows how to impose mitigations, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And if they don't do a good job of doing it, then the opponents can appeal
to us. We can bring it back to them as
I'm all right with the SUP, too. You know, it doesn't
I'm fine. I mean, I don't have a strong feeling, but it doesn't seem to me that there's a compelling need for it to be a more arduous process for the applicants mm-hmm. unless there's something mm-hmm. that I'm missing.
Well, other than what Jed said, every one of them that we've had has been very contentious.
Yeah, do you want to be part of that process?
Say what?
Do you want to be part of that process?
Okay, I'm fine with that.
Only when you have to.
The buck stops here, so.
Yeah.
I mean, and especially when we start talking about mitigation and requirements of the permit, I think it's fine for us to be putting, no, you can only be open till 8 o'clock.
Right.
You need to close the doors at 10 or whatever, so we can...
I think we probably have a tendency to be a little harsher than the Planning Commission in terms of imposing mitigations.
Yeah,
that's why I think it's fine for us to be...
I suppose until we start seeing 20 or 30 of them a year...
But does that mean the existing venues are going to have to come back for an SUP?
No, they
continue with the
correct.
CUP.
Just
they
like those
rec
facilities that you saw that already have their permits,
They can be renewed as is, but if they request an amendment, it needs to meet the new standards.
How many wedding venues do we have? I mean, we have
question,
John Adams.
So we have, I think, two...
Flying Diamond, Dr. Orton's.
Has he ever used it?
Yeah, I ran into him the other day. He said, yeah, he and Robin still.
But,
not to the intent they originally got approval
for.
But
here's the catch. A lot of them get their permit, and like the one up north, Fetcher? Not Fetcher.
Dolce?
No, up in Steamboat Lake.
Fetcher, it went away.
Yeah.
It went away
because
it becomes too much of a hassle from the, the bride's... the father of the bride, apparently, it gets to be way too much drama. Is what we heard. That's twice now we've heard this. So
it's not shocking.
I mean,
Kathy Ciavara, the one on 33.
Who?
Ciavara's. That's going back a little bit. After Appleflats, where the road winds down the hill. There.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah.
There's a wedding venue down there?
There was.
It used to be.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're off topic.
So, anyway, I'd say probably six, half dozen. Yeah.
So I think everybody agreed with the agritourism enterprise too, which currently does not allow for overnight accommodations. The recommendation would be to allow overnight accommodations, but they recommend a higher level of review. Currently, it depends on how many vehicle trips per day. If it's less than 50, it's reviewed as a minor use permit, essentially like a counter permit. If it's more than 50 trips per day, it's an administrative permit. We send out referrals. There's a little more of a process, even though it's still in-house. It doesn't require a public hearing, but they felt it should require a public hearing if there were overnight accommodations associated with it, and the recommendation was a CUP.
Looks good.
Agreed.
Okay.
Sounds great.
Yes, I'm supposed to say it out loud. I'm not supposed to just nod my head.
For the record, you nodded your head. This just is it right now, what I just discussed with Denver Tourism. And there was an added piece to the CUP, the bottom here, for an agritourism with overnight accommodations. The Planning Commission wanted to recommend that activities are generally passive in nature with low impact, such as farm-to-table cooking classes versus, I'm trying to think of a use that I guess it wouldn't really be fit under the definition. Rodeo?
Well, I mean, I guess
I feel it's covered in the definition already. So, for purpose of recreation, education, or active involvement in the farm or ranch operation, this term includes, but is not limited to, farm tours, hay rides, cooking classes, and classes related to agricultural products.
Fence building.
Fence building. In my opinion, I feel that is covered. But I understand.
Sort of think you're going to get into splitting hairs about what kind of ranch or farm or agricultural activities are considered passive and which ones are not. If we add an additional term of passive.
I don't think it's necessary. I think they were just, we don't want it to become something that it isn't.
Well, I think the activities need to be, like it says above, active involvement, you know, related directly to the farm, working farm or ranch. But I'm concerned if we add that phrase about passive, that there's an additional.
Where did you see that? I don't see that.
Right
at the very bottom.
Activities are generally passive in nature with low impact, such as farm to table cooking classes.
What about live country music? Square dancing.
I mean, you can.
But again,
but
we're talking about overnight stay in that.
I know that you're saying it's not necessary, but what I'm saying is I think that it actually complicates it because you're adding this additional layer of it having to be generally passive. Mm-hmm. And then, so we're saying it's activities conducted on a working farm or ranch, blah, 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 that are generally passive. I mean, there could be activities conducted on a working farm or ranch that wouldn't be objectively considered passive.
And they would be evaluated. They would be evaluated for those impacts, right? And there could be conditions. So if there was square dancing and music of the Western flavor,
it's country and Western. I don't like
that. There could be hours of operation attached to the conditions of approval to mitigate some of those impacts. So I guess that would be part of the evaluation of the application.
So
but
I guess,
do get your
I think I don't know about the passive. I'm not so worried up about the word passive, but we're trying to get away from this being the only operation, and it's not a farm, period. So that's what we're trying to dig down to.
Right.
So when does it turn into that's what they do instead of farming?
Well, it says activities conducted on a working farm or ranch.
And I feel like as it's a working farm or ranch, mm-hmm. I don't know why you need this part about
the
activities being passive in nature.
Yeah.
Or passive to the working farm.
I can tell you they did not feel strongly about adding that.
Okay.
So,
but I mean, I assume that when we approve the or look at these mm-hmm. kinds of things, we want the activities to be directly related to the farming, ranching activities.
And, like, clearly,
and if they're not,
clearly secondary too.
Something you might worry about is down there on the Four Eagle Ranch down on 131 before you get to mm-hmm. Wolcott. Uh-huh. That place down there is a train wreck.
Yeah.
But, you know, I saw that they were conducting. They conduct tours there, and they've got 40 people on four-wheelers.
Oh,
40
yeah.
four-wheelers.
They also have glamping.
They have
glamping. You seen that?
Yep, I've seen the glamping.
But are they
there's almost nothing that they don't do there.
But
it makes a high-speed roadhouse look like a...
It's Eagle County. And it's, oh, no, it's I know Eagle County.
Oh, like he's just saying, right. Yeah, it's not us. Yeah.
I don't see how you could air that.
But you, I'd like to at least be able to say no to a,
but something like
a
that.
44 wheelers, which is considered a traditional ranching activity.
But what if you have like a couple of four wheelers? I mean, that doesn't, I wouldn't consider that passive in nature with low impact, but it's the scale and size.
Yeah.
Correct.
Right?
Maybe
I mean, moving cattle is not passive in nature with low impact, right?
Yeah. I mean, riding your four-wheeler around your property is standard agricultural
Absolutely.
Activity.
Oh, yeah.
So I would say that I'm going to cross that out.
Okay.
Because yeah, I think that it complicates it, and that top definition is more adequate for what we want.
I think Planning Commission would be fine with that.
Forget that they
just
said
as
this.
As long as it's clearly secondary.
Yeah, I think it's secondary, yeah.
I mean, so you couldn't say, yeah, I've got like a sheep lease once a year and you're renting out four cabins or something.
Or have,
yeah.
You got your little family garden out there and that's your ag part, and then you've got your lodging there, your fourth. So they might as well come in with the bed and breakfast. So
or it becomes a guest ranch at a certain point, which is a different category.
And we can make that determination at the staff level. When they come in with their part of their application process, they come in with a narrative.
Right.
Generally, they're meeting with us beforehand anyway, and based on what our discussion is on, we can navigate them to which land use category is most appropriate. And we generally have an art review or some sort of internal meeting first.
So is there language anywhere in here in these standards that talk about secondary or in support of
operations? So we're talking about that more for rec facilities.
Okay.
So if you recall, and it got a little complicated about distinguishing.
But sorry, I don't want to talk about rec facilities. I'm talking about under the agritourism definition.
Is
there a place that we're referencing the fact that this is supportive of or secondary to, that it's not the
so
primary
use?
Yes,
so they're in the standards, and forgive me, I don't have a
That's
slide there. But there are over 10 standards under Section 8 of the regulations.
Okay.
And it is pretty specific to make sure.
That's all I was asking.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we on the Buffalo Ranch, we kind of had that conversation. Is the income from the recreational element of this outweighing the income from the ranch activities?
But was that this or was that a guest ranch?
That was a guest ranch.
But it's still
so
the same,
it's different
still
standards.
The same concept,
anyway.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it's different standards. My question was really whether these
standards.
I don't know if we have a good standard
for that.
So,
it ends up being a subjective determination on our part of saying, well, wait a minute. This feels like.
But we have to write it in the
standards
in some way so that we can evaluate whether they're meeting that standard.
So we'll include that, and if it's soft, we will include some options for.
You understand what I mean?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
We all agree with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So last but not least, we started the conversation about rec facilities. And the conversation became distinguishing between active and passive recreation as being that intensity of use determination. And staff had suggested that facilities with active recreation could require an SUP, and facilities with inactive forms of recreation could require a CUP, regardless of whether they had overnight accommodations or not. We were talking about, like, for example, golf or horseback riding, to what degree?
Inactive forms of recreation, isn't that a bear?
Yeah, how are we defining the difference between active and inactive?
So
that's, what form of
that was the conversation we had with Planning Commission.
That's the wrong word, inactive.
Where?
Because inactive
second
just
bullet.
Means you're just not doing it.
There, the bear.
Inactive. Yeah, you're just laying
you meant
there.
Passive,
yes.
Right?
Let's see. And we were talking about like high impact and low impact categories.
I don't understand the difference between these categories. Do you have examples of what would fall into each of these categories?
Well, Planning Commission didn't like it anyway.
Oh, okay.
Great.
Okay.
So this is
because I also don't like it.
Yeah.
So perfect. They agree.
They agree.
It's in our PUD standards, but they're not defined either.
It's very confusing.
Yeah. So really what happened at Planning Commission was, Paul Hoffman showed up. And he proposed option one. And everybody was like, and it was more or less like, wow, that makes sense. Why are we splitting hairs here? And basically,
predictability for the applicant.
Yeah, and he just said, just simplify the process. And what is one more meeting?
But to Tim's point, that's because they need to know whether it's likely to be approved or not. I mean, if we have no information for them about what we want.
Well, it wasn't necessarily an approval or denial instance. It was when it goes to Planning Commission, when it goes to the board.
Yeah.
Yes, but basically any rec facility across the board, if you're coming in as a rec facility, it's an SUP. Planning Commission kind of liked it, but they then were talking about it, and for the most part, they were like, but I don't know how comfortable we are about like something that has uses that really is an impact, has low impacts, sending them through the SUP process, and maybe option two might be better, and limiting a few types of activities listed as very low impact, with most everything else falling into the SUP category. So it's a semi-simplified version of number one.
And we're still talking about this being the primary use of the property,
correct,
right?
We're not talking about Beth having her house.
I just think about like Tim Borden's property where he, you know, he grooms some trails.
Yeah,
like
he lives there.
Right, that's my point.
Yeah, so that's the primary use of that property, and he recreates on his property.
Okay,
that's
just making sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's...
And again, we just don't care about whether or not people are charging money for these activities. That's not a consideration.
Well, I think, so...
It's the intensity
if they are,
on the land.
It is, but I think Planning Commission strongly agreed, and I believe you all did originally, that if it is commercial, automatically it's an SUP.
Yeah.
Like if it's open to the general public.
Correct.
If someone can pay...
Charge money.
Yes. Yeah. So under this bullet here, everything else is an SUP, such as if it's a commercial use, overnight accommodations, which we can further talk about that one if you want, but public access, they felt frequency and numbers of uses more than 50 plus trips per day. I took that number out of the agritourism number, and we have it as standard under another land use category I can't think of at the moment, but basically you're having more impacts with traffic coming in and out of the site.
Yeah, value added.
Thank you.
So I'm in support of option two because when I look at that list of things there, I wouldn't want to make all those people who are doing those things if it's minimal, right? But I guess my question is, what kind of limitations do we have on what those operations look like? So, like, for example, okay, you can conduct hunting, but you can't build a hunting village without it requiring
an
SUP.
To answer your question, and something I guess Troy had brought up, is you can have a really busy property that has riding stables. That's the primary use, and you have hundreds of horses, right? But do you meet the second test? Is it commercial?
Right.
So now you're an SUP. Is it trips per day?
Right.
Push into that second category. So I think the first test is you can have riding stables, and that might be a CUP under the first category. But then when we get more information about the use in their narrative, you know, how many horses are going to be there, how many trips per day, you know, is it open to the public? It may bump you into that second category.
Got it.
Does that make sense?
It does.
I'm confused.
I think wherever we can change it again if we don't like it too. So as we move along here, but I'm all right with the two, option two, talking about the two. So we're going to end up having a two-step process, and then the lesser ones, as Beth said, could still get through a CUP.
Correct. Yes.
What I'm confused about is if on my 35-acre parcel.
Yeah.
If you live there, this doesn't apply.
So remember that part.
If that was my question. Like,
if you're living there and the primary use of your property is a residence, right?
Because that's where I was getting to.
And I know that's a hard, because we have struggled with that in the past too, and that's not what we're trying to regulate here.
This is just accessory.
Which is good. We don't want to get into that world.
Exactly.
So not to get too deep into the ways, but that's, I'm going to go deep into the ways. So I own a 35-acre parcel that I don't live on.
Okay.
And I go out and groom a cross-country trail on that 35-acre parcel. Mm-hmm. And I go out, and my wife and I go out and ski on it. I get a CUP.
Not necessarily. Because some of those could be uses by right.
So what bumps it up to not being a use by right?
If they are, so some of those uses could be are uses by right, but if you have a cross-country trail on your property and you are having events, races, events, I'm trying to.
But this still says private, non-commercial. So at what point does it stop being a use by right and it requires a CUP? What's the line?
It would be.
Maybe we need to clarify that.
Yeah.
I imagine building a structure would take you over the top pretty quick.
There's a different land use category that's the difference between those is permanent staging area and no permanent staging area.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that's true.
So have we addressed, you know, Troy has brought up a couple of times, even when we talked about the Green Creek Ranch, the uses by right, and I know we're still in a conversation about that uses by right and the commercialization of that uses by right, and even with the private golf course out there, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm just, I think I'm pretty clear in my mind. Is it clear enough in the regulations what we're doing and why we're doing it for?
I think how we have processed these in the past is it's not just the uses by right, but I think it's how you look at the property being used in a holistic matter. So, I mean, if you have some uses that could be considered by right because you have walking trails, right, along with something that's listed in the land use chart for shooting range, you have that, but all of those.
Point, you have so many uses by right add up to too many uses by right.
Right, exactly. So, and that was part of the two or fewer of those activities. That number is totally arbitrary, admittedly. Planning Commission just were like, let's start with two, and that was going to be another.
So, should I say two or more instead of two or fewer?
No, it's a CUP.
Yes.
If it's more than two, then it requires an S.
Correct.
So I have another question then. So we've kind of steered around or away from hunting lodges and those kind of things. Where are we at there now with that? I mean, we had the illegal one down there, and we have a bunch of them. I don't know that we had the one that we ended up taking to compliance. When West were out. Older gentleman that we ended up.
Sure.
Then had the building.
Well, my wife had that property listed.
Building permit issues too. So, so our build or if you have permanent lodge or have lodging for hunting.
Right. Permanent staging.
Permanent
lodging.
Well, actually, lodging. You know, I mean, could be a lodge. Or
I don't know what you would use it for if somebody wasn't staying there overnight.
No, I'm right. So where would it fit in?
I would say it would be a rec facility.
Okay.
Here.
Yeah.
And it would
so
be the SUP.
Need to get a permit. SUP. And what happens if they've had it there and it's been a use for right by right for, I mean, it's been a use.
That's a good question.
It's
because
you mean if it was like a single family house and you bought it for the purpose of turning it into a hunting
Well,
camp,
I shouldn't ask this,
you
know, but. So
it's very clear cut. If you've got somebody sleeping inside of a building, it needs a building permit.
No, I understand that. I didn't have a problem with the building, but there's, I'm still
different
struggling with.
Let's
the,
say you were
the
a commissioner and you owned a property and what? No, I'm just.
Yeah. And it has about two extra cabins on it, and then.
You know, we can make
so hypothetically
those questions for law exams.
Yeah. Right.
Exams.
So.
What's your question?
So hypothetically,
I think what we really need, though, is we still need to ensure that our regulations are very clear on the difference between a use by right and what requires a permit. And we need to make sure that whatever that says, we understand and it's justifiable.
And it's, you know, and that's an ongoing problem that every planning department has as far as when is your definition of accessory.
We just need to do the best we can, I think.
Right.
We need to make sure that question is being considered.
So getting back to that, the facility the old guy had out there in West Ventura, yep. I remember.
Bill Terrell.
Bill Terrell, exactly. Yep. We were able to make the point that there was the lodging, and that was a problem. But it was even a problem having the staging area. If all he had had out there was a staging area for hunters, then that needed some kind of a permit.
Oh, he's asking her.
Right. I think that's the determination that we made.
Yeah.
Why? And why would it need a permit?
Because you're gathering employees and people inside of a... Maybe it wasn't the building department.
And so the other question...
He's still trying to say he was a grandfather.
And so the reason why I bring this up, we need, I don't know, and whether we have the... What happens if it's a tent? What happens if it's a huge tent that that's going to be their...
That's our camping regulations.
So that
well,
is...
Well, no, what if they're just
take
staging
it down.
There? They're
so if it's just... That would be a use by right is without permanent staging, but I think historically the hunting camps, like drop camps...
Right. Do you have your book back there?
Have been allowed as a use by right. Doesn't require a permit.
Well, so
a drop
in here right now.
Because they're not...
Our camping regulations, I can buy a 35-acre parcel, and I can camp on it for up to 6 months without any kind of a permit.
Well,
so...
Up to
30 days
without, and then yes,
right. Mm-hmm.
Which is it's a minor use permit,
okay.
But yeah,
I see.
Not
that's
one true. Person has come in for one, just so you know.
It's over here, though.
They just go ahead and do what they doing.
Yeah, but yeah, that would be under our camping.
So you guys don't need to answer the question now, but I guess
we need to consider the question.
I just want to make sure I'd rather be talking about it now than when something comes up and we go, well, these guys are. Staging out of they bought this property and that's the only reason they're using it for.
So,
because nobody's even living.
So if it's a drop camp, Doug.
Well, I'm talking about two different things. Let's say the guy just bought it and nobody lives there, but they're renting it out on a nightly or a hunting basis for the hunting season to somebody, and then also and bringing
in.
Wouldn't
our camping regulations allow that? Do our camping? Our camping regulations are not specific to the owner of the property, are they?
No.
No.
So
they could bring in campers, in fact, camp on that property, too, with our camping regulations.
Yeah.
Yes. It would either be under our... it would require a minor use permit if it was extended camping, and you'd have to meet those standards that are listed in the regulations. Or you can do it as of right for less than...
But it is different if you're running a business... on that property. And
why?
And your hunters are paying you a fee to take them hunting. And you're
well, there's a line in the land use chart for that.
Oh, there is?
Yeah. So there's an actual hunting.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to find.
Okay, that's kind of what I was asking you. So yeah, maybe you answered that. Then.
So hunting is hunting
has
a separate.
It has its own line in the land use chart.
So are we complicating matters by including it here? If it has its own separate line.
Yeah, but I guess that's saying you're hunting and doing something else. You're
also,
not just hunting. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
It's not just... It's one thing if you're just hunting on that property, but if you're using that property as a staging area to bring hunters in and then go up and hunt on the National Forest, well, for one thing, you need an outfitting permit,
mm-hmm.
which he was also running afoul of at the time.
Yeah.
Bill Terrell was...
But if you had that same property and didn't guide them to the National Forest and had a path, in fact,
if
drive
you
across.
If you say run up that path.
Yeah, or drive across my road. When you get to the end of the road, you're in the National Forest.
So those two lines are hunting, private or commercial, provided no permanent staging or permanent lodging facilities associated with commercial hunting, use by right. have zone district.
Okay, that's
and that's where Bill Terrell got in trouble because he had a building, not right. just for lodging. He had a building
right.
for staging his oh, yeah. hunting outfitting operation out of
right it. Without a planning permit or building permit.
Right.
Yes. And then the other one is hunting or fishing facilities, private or commercial, with permanent staging or permanent lodging areas associated with commercial hunting, CUP.
So this is my question. I mean, are we complicating things by including those activities under rec facility? Are we now going to have things that fall into both? Simultaneously.
This one typically obviously casts a bigger net as far as the uses than this one does. So I think that this is just accommodating multiple uses, whereas hunting fishing is just.
So maybe some clarification about the line.
Yeah, yeah.
What's that?
Could we eliminate the existing regulation and replace it with this rather than, like, I hear what Beth is saying.
Gotcha.
You got people coming in and going, oh, I can do this or I can do that, gaming the system.
So, you know, I think the hunting part is maybe somebody actually raising their own birds and doing bird hunting.
Like on their property.
On their property.
Yeah,
we might not.
Maybe just look at how these, my suggestion would be look at how these regulations relate to the hunting that's already in there. Because definitely, if they're both going to exist, we want there to be consistency in the requirements.
Sure.
And is it possible that they don't both need to exist?
First thought, I'd say the use by right stays. The CUP
could
be replaced with this one.
Which would make sense.
Yep. Yeah. I like that.
Sense.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Did we beat this enough to death yet?
You know that no matter what we come up with, someone's going to come in with something that does not fit.
They'll be right when we're ready to approve it. Yep. Generally what happens, right?
That'll happen.
Okay.
You already showed us that.
Yep.
Great.
All right. Hey, Doug, real quick. I was thinking about the wedding venues. There could be as many as 13. Catamount, La Jolla Dulce, Lucky 8, Coles, Orton, Elk River Guest Ranch, Home Ranch, we'll see. Combine Cabins has a few. Flying Diamond, Four Points Hut at the Ski Mountain, and possibly Bella Vista in the Glen.
Good.
I think
good.